This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Down. All right, guys, that was Isis there with False Light, coming off the album Oceanic. And this is the General here, back in the chair. It is, let's see, June 6th, 2014. And, you know, I figured I'd reach out to the Renegade audience, just see how everybody's doing, if anybody wants to chat. As usual, don't be disappointed if I don't have any fiery speeches tonight. Just trying to get back into the game. And I can't promise a show every single week. I tentatively scheduled the name of the show for Break Radio, kind of as a joke. Because it's an inside joke, goes back to my friend who had knew a DJ who actually had a show of that name in a college radio show. So, but yeah, my situation hasn't changed. I'm still in hostile enemy territory here, as we all are. Yeah, I'm really going to kind of rely on you guys tonight to call in and bring up topics. Do have some things to read, some things on my mind. A lot has happened. It's been a while. I want to basically say some things about, well, I'm amazed that Kyle's been able to keep the network going for so long. It's just everybody who's been picking up where others have left off have done a great job, and I've been trying to keep up with most of the shows. You know, it's been a pretty hectic, working a lot. It's kind of taken over my life, but yeah, I just I don't know. I kind of on a whim gave Kyle a call, told him to set me up here. And, you know, I was thinking for a while of just maybe doing my own show independently of any network. You're not tied to any particular group of people, because I hated seeing just everybody going at each other. And, you know, it was a shame with the whole everything that has happened. That has taken place with between Mike Sledge and you know, everything with the different networks attacking Kyle and everything. I definitely wanted to, because I had been silent through that whole thing, and you know, I thought it was completely ridiculous. You know, he absolutely did something good with the White Man March, and yeah, I mean, it was an experiment. I think it's something to be proud of. But yeah, you know, it's just really, that's the biggest problem I had was people turning their backs on each other. And I don't know how well people can hear me. Let me check the chat room just to make sure, because it's been so long. There was a 205 number that called in before. I see Kyle's got me on. Let's see here. View from the chat. All right. Yeah, so basically, you know, I was really disappointed in a number of individuals. Not even going to get into all that stuff, but I've been listening to a number of different shows. I get different angles. I still listen to Tom Metzger. Still listen to. I actually caught up a lot on Dave in Texas's shows. Caught up a lot on Might Is Right. I, you know, those people who all are against each other. I don't see the issue. We have different opinions, different coming from different backgrounds or ideologies. Methodologies of the way to attack the problem, the way to navigate through this modern world. And I don't think anybody is really 100% correct. You know, there's all different strategies, whether it's lone wolf or going more mainstream. A lot of great news coming out of Europe. We're going to get into that. I don't know if you guys have been following the elections over there, but in France, Le Pen's party is on the way towards being the president. I mean, she's, I don't know if they took third or something like that. Big news with the Golden Dawn. Let's see here. I mean, basically all over, the far-right nationalists are on the rise. So it's a good thing. It's good to see. Just how do we translate that to America? But yeah, I've had a lot of things happen personally. You know, it's just things have come out as far as my views, my beliefs. It's affected you know, the relationship with my own family. And I know people out there understand how that is, because you don't really get away with it unless you just keep your mouth shut, and I've never been able to do that well. So, you know, we had some incidents, and the Italian in me, the rash decision maker, that's kind of why I called up Kyle, because I just felt like I wanted to get on the air, because within my family, we've had an issue where, I don't know, it's just come out that that I am, you know, who I am, and certain people have been listening to my past podcasts, and, you know, it's my brother's, I guess, got a girlfriend who is threatening to, like, break up with him or something, and he's all mad at me. So it's all this crazy bull, but personal stuff, really don't want to get into, but it did motivate me to kind of get back onto the air, because, you know, I'm just not going to be held down. I mean, that's how I see it. I can get into that more later. People call in and want to ask me about it. But, yeah, we had a Memorial Day today, so you can feel proud of being an American, flying the flag at half staff for D-Day. You had Obama over there talking to Vladimir Putin, the old comrades in arms uniting Russia and America after they teamed up against Germany. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, where was I? We got Putin and Obama teaming up over the Ukraine issue. This is something else. I think, let me see if I'm getting a message from Kyle. I don't know if you want to have me to call, like, to come on. Okay, let me see. I guess Drew's giving me a call here, so it'd be good to talk with him. I'll pull him up. Let's see here. Add to the call. Alright. I don't know if this is Drew or not. I'm just going to pull pull this number up. This is a 661 number. 661, who is this and where are you calling from?
You know, first there was the Jim Morrison mystery. Then the Elvis Lives controversy. And most recently, the what happened to Dana Antiochus question. Now, this has led certain people to fervently and vehemently begin discussing their various Dana sightings. Now, Dana, I'm calling to ask you to either confirm or deny this, but I'm personally certain I spotted you walking down Hollywood Boulevard with two tall blonde Russian babes sporting Hello Kitty short shorts. Now, I encountered a lot of controversy, a lot of doubters out there, calling me a liar, calling me fractious, calling me, you know, all kind of nasty names. So can you either confirm or deny my sighting?
Yes, I can confirm that. That definitely was me. I get around. I'm on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. I'm all over the place.
Hey, all right. Well, it's good to hear you back on the air.
Yeah, man, it's good to hear your voice, too.
Well, you know.
You're the reason I came back, Frank.
You sound like my old girlfriend, man, you know. I had to let her go, though. But anyway, what have you been up to, you know? Working hard?
Not much. Work a lot, yeah. Got two jobs.
The American nightmare. Two farting jobs, right? To quote Charles Giuliani. Wow, man. Oof, that hurts. That's gotta hurt. I've been through those two job periods in my life, so hang in there. You'll probably come out okay.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, I had a lot of issues that kind of just compelled me to call Kyle and tell him, you know, you gotta put me back on. I gotta let all this hate out, you know. It's but yeah.
Come on, don't let it get you down. I know this is going to upset all the cheerleaders in the audience, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. Family is overrated. Family is overrated. You know, if you listen to Coast, 3 out of 4 so-called life after death experts will tell you that we selected our families prior to birth. Yeah, I can pretty much tell you that's a load right there. We didn't select them, buddy. It's pretty fracking random, if you ask me. And like I've told most of my relatives, look, if after you pass, and you know I love you guys, I don't want you to pass, but you're going to pass, and then you see that magic shaft of white light breaking through the clouds, and you get a little telegram saying Frank's on his way, you don't have to be there to greet me. You just don't. I mean, one lifetime with most of you bastards is more than enough.
Yeah, well, in America, too, the problem here is that, you know, if you have any healthy, sane thinking, if you're psychologically normal, you're going to be an outcast. So, you know, it's like if you're not following the herd... So it's kind of alienating here. It's sad because it'd be nice if our families could march in lockstep with our beliefs, but that's just not how it happens most of the time. We're the heretics, we're the rebels. So,
well, you're absolutely right. Except for
so be it.
You're absolutely right, except for one word: beliefs. There are no beliefs here. We're simply people who have looked at the facts and come to certain conclusions based on those facts. We don't operate, and I use the term we loosely because there's a lot of, you know, a lot of variations here and there among the we with the big W, but we tend to be more or less people who have simply looked at the facts and come to realistic conclusions. They're the ones with the beliefs, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I got this is what happened. Basically, my sister had a wedding party, and there was a lot of tension in the air, you know, because just being there. And you know, it just everything, all everything came out. Pandora's box was open, you know. This happened a little while before because my sister overheard me on the phone talking. She heard me talking. I was actually on Rodney Martin's show, speaking to one of the Golden Dawn guys or something, and she heard me having a conversation, and she freaked out.
Wow.
And she kind of, you know, got all worried and upset. And we have, I mentioned that we have, you know, my uncle married a Jew. So there's that. Mm-hmm. And then you have that part of the family. And then there was another issue with my brother is dating this woman who works in a Jewish law firm. And,
And they don't get upset when they find out from us that it's the Jews who teach that we're all animals created to serve them. That they don't get upset with them. You know, they get upset with the person who simply told them that that's the belief that they have. I mean, it is beyond surreal, but I'm done whining about it. It is what it is. And they're basically worthless, and that's all there is to it. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, my attitude is if I'm going to be ostracized, you know, for telling the truth, then I'm going to, then that's, I'll just deal with that. I don't care. I mean,
you gotta be proactive. Don't be ostracized. Ostracize. That's what I've done all my life. I mean, to this day, they're all still inviting me here, there, and everywhere, and I just really don't have any time for them, except some time for my mother. You know, that's kind of a sacred bond right there. So, you know, I've kind of left the human race altogether. Even most of our own people are completely insane. Even a lot of people in the so-called movement are completely insane. So, you know, I have hopes for the long-term prospects of our people, but only if they can jettison all the shackles and chains that bind them. And in fact, I've been thinking about this lately, this 14 words, 14 words. And, you know, I love David Lane's work, so I think his Damned, Deceived, and Defiant is brilliant. I think his idea of the Wotanism religion is brilliant. But the 14 words, upon closer scrutiny, I don't know, they speak of an existence, a future for our people. It just says preserve the existence and, quote, a future. I don't know about that, because we have an existence now. And we have a future, too, as slaves. So I don't know that I want to preserve that, you know?
I'm unplugging.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm having an issue here right now, actually.
You got to be kidding.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I'm trying to... As soon as I move... Hey, Frank, you there?
Yeah, how you doing, man? You all right?
Yeah, I'm back. My mother just tried to pull the plug on my internet connection there, but I have a...
Hey, listen, are you just talking to me now, or are we on the air?
No, we're on the air. We're back.
Now, I hear someone in the chat, Return of Tears, saying, I think Frank is still on. Could someone in the chat verify that you're hearing Dana as well? Let me just see what's happening on the chat here. Somebody write if you're hearing Dana as well right now. No reply here. Could be just you and I having a conversation. Uh-oh. Says Frank, looks like you're the host now. No, I don't want that. I'm going to be out of here if that's the case. No. Well, hey, Dana, it's good to talk to you, man. But this is going to sound kind of weird if I'm talking to someone on the air. Oh, okay. Return of Tears says I'm hearing both.
No, we're both.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, we're both.
Hey, Dana,
yeah.
I just wanted to give you one word of encouragement. I went through something like that as well. This is way back in the 80s, and I've gone through that that sort of family tumult and travail, and it was rough, but I came out of it all the stronger for it. So I think you will as well.
Yeah, well, what happened was, you know, and then my brother, I think he wants to, like, break up with this girl. I can't tell, but she was asking
What the hell do you have to do with your brother and this girl? It's just ludicrous, man. This is the problem with these close-knit families.
Nothing.
I mean, come on.
She just made she made the idea that she doesn't want to be associated with anybody like that, you know.
Oh, that's not true love then, man. That's your brother. He should figure that out. That's not true love at all. Could you imagine Juliet telling Romeo, "Yeah, you're all right, dude. You even kind of look like Justin Bieber, but your dad is a real SOB. Hey, I'll see you later." I mean, that is not Shakespeare. That is not love, you know?
Well, I guess he escaped in and he told her that, you know, I'm a Nazi. That's why he can't. That's why he's so hard on me. So, you know, and then she Googled my name and I'm a Google villain. So it's it all just unraveled from there. But, you know, I basically said, look, I'm embarrassed that you're not saying these things. That you're not speaking the truth, you know, that it's like, come on. I mean, back when you were a kid, you knew the score, but that was just a phase. You know, I just never left the phase. I just kind of ran with it, but
it's one thing living in a hostile society with hostile neighbors, as I do, but it is another thing to live under a hostile roof. And so you got to get out, as you already know, easier said than done. But let's just say I live in pretty humble circumstances. I got three kitty cats laying beside me right now. You know, I date when I want to. I don't even like to tell girls I'm dating, who I am, to tell you the truth. I mean, I know that sounds terrible, but I've always been a good guy, and they've always turned out to be crazy and vengeful. So, you know, I guess you could say I'm a lone wolf dater at this point. You know, I just, I tell them, you know, I don't even like to tell them what I do for a living. You know, it sounds terrible, man. I'm just telling you like it is. I am one suspicious son of a bitch, but it is all well earned, I assure you. In more ways than I can relate. Well, anyway, I don't want to take up too much time here. I know there's other people who probably want to say hi and give you some moral support, but I did want to float one thing by you, and I am in no way trying to replace the 14 words. This is just some of my own, let's call it creative writing. And I came up with my own 13 words because 13 was a sacred number in various pagan cultures, and in numerology the number 12 is the number of completeness, but the number 13 is referred to as the number of transition and change. So I came up with 13 words, which are just, you know, for me, my own edification, you might say. And it goes like this: we must smash the shackles which now enslave us physically, mentally, and spiritually. And the other variation is we must break the chains that keep us enslaved or keep Europeans enslaved, if you want to go specific. We must break the chains that keep Europeans enslaved physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Right. By that, you're talking about Christianity and
well, everything. When I say physically, I'm referring to, you know, Ukrainian slaves in Israel, mentally refers to most of us as well as spiritually. So I'm trying to cover all the bases because for me, existence and a future, no thanks. I've learned to be a lot more specific when I'm reading the fine print. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Well, man, that sounds good, man. And it was great to talk with you, Frank. Man, that's
likewise.
Really,
it's really good hearing your voice.
Your
I'll tell
input.
You, even when you did those shows where the chair was squeaking, and you were combination ad-libbing and reading, it was more compelling than all the polished sounding voices I've heard on Mammy's shit, you know. So you always did a great job, and people have really been wondering what happened to you. I couldn't believe it. I'm listening to Bill the other night, and he and Vince and Damon were all floating theories as to what happened with Dana. And I'm not around that often, but I've heard also on the chat a number of times, you know, what happened to Dana. We don't see him in the chat. And so I pretty much called it that, you know, the signs were there. You were having some difficulties, and you were the kind of guy, it struck me, that would be most upset by all the schisms in the renegade religion. And that's because you were always the most loyal and the most optimistic of the bunch. So I knew that would have brought you down as well.
It made me so negative that I felt I would be better off not being on the air, you know, because it just really kind of created this cynicism and pessimism inside of me when I see you know, just people turning on each other. It's that's the biggest problem.
You know, it's like you have to do unity,
you know.
Well, you know, when you would always say such things, I would always smile, and, you know, I kind of knew just from a lot of life experience that most things tend to go bad. But anyway, I like your optimism better than my cynicism. And don't feel obliged to always be, you know, doing a weekly show or whatever. But it's just at least nice to hear from you once in a while. And, again, I'm going to take off here. And just say, hang in there, man. You know, we're rooting for you. And it was great talking to you, Dana.
All right, Frank. Love you, man.
Take care. Love you, too.
All right. That was Frank. It was great to hear from him. Probably one of my favorite callers of all time, without a doubt. This is a 205 number. Let's see who this is. 205. 205, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Jeb. I'm calling from Birmingham. I'm just listening.
Hey, Jeb, how's it going, man?
Pretty good.
Well, how you been, man?
Good to hear you back. I've been doing all right. Yeah. It's pretty exciting around here. How about you?
Yeah, I've been all right, man. Helped my buddy Wolf CT put up a fence. That took a while. Took about a month. And, yeah, man, just working and, you know, living the dream. But, I don't know, trying to just get myself situated. And, you know, it's just, it's hard, man. It's hard to save money. It's hard to, you know, get yourself in a place where you can really start doing some damage, you know. So, yeah. I don't know, that's what I'm working towards, but, just felt like I needed to make an appearance because it's been a while.
It has. Well, I've missed you. I liked your shows, so I'm glad to hear you back. Are you going to be back for a steady thing, or you just make an appearance for a little bit?
I don't know, man. I don't know. You know, I really, if I thought about doing a show on my own, you know, just going solo, but I'll be honest, I really just don't want to pay for the Blog Talk prescription or whatever the subscription thing is. and I already have like a following on Renegade, so I don't know. I probably I might do a regular thing. We'll see. I'm gonna just kind of see how it goes, you know. But yeah, you know, might come up with a new name, new show, and take it from there. Getting a lot of resistance. Getting a lot of resistance over here. That's the problem. You know, it's just they, you know, my family. They don't want me to be a public figure, but it's like it's too late anyway. So, what the hell?
Do you operate under your real name, or is Dana Antakis a pseudonym?
That is a real name. That's my first name. But,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, people do know, you know, it's out there, and I'm on Facebook with my real name, and I've connected, linked the shows through Facebook, so, you know, it is out there. I mean, the enemy knows who I am, so.
Okay, well, I mean,
you know, whatever, I mean, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with being anonymous, you know, I don't knock people who want to, you know, basically not give away who they are, put a target on their back. You know, I don't mind that at all. But on the other hand, I think people should also stand by their beliefs, you know, because it makes it that much more powerful if you're willing to put your name to your ideals.
Yes, I agree with that. And I take my hat off to, you know, people that put their real names out there or at least, you know, leave a trail to where they can be found. You know, that's ballsy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to have, like, if you got a lot to lose, you know, that's a different story. If you're, and if you have a lot to lose and you still go forward, yeah, that's the ultimate courage right there. I mean, because it's just, we're living in a society where people just don't understand. They don't have the faintest notion of what we represent, what we stand for. You know, it's all ideas implanted into them by the media, and just you know, it's these stupid words that people run away from. I mean, they're really afraid of just words. It's sad, you know, because if they could brush that off, you know, sticks and stones, we would be on our way towards victory. But yeah, it's all mental. It's all a mental barrier to get past. But, you know, I really just don't care, to be honest with you. I just don't care at this point. Because I don't have any kind of prestige that I'm trying to guard or shield. You just don't want people thinking you're crazy. So you got to just talk with them, you know, if they ask you, you know. You got to explain to them what you're all about. You can't let your adversaries define who you are, and that's kind of what we've been doing for a long time.
That is the absolute truth. And a lot of times we let our adversaries pick our allies too. And so, you know, like the people that are trying to destroy us, like, you know, they really have our best interests at heart. You know, it's insane. But hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm right. But, hell, like I said, man, I'm glad to hear you back. And, you know, I just tuned in and listened. I was on my phone and I was browsing through the website and saw that you're going to be doing a show today. So I was like, well, hell, I'm going to tune in and see what he's got to say.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, thanks a lot, man. It's good to hear your voice, too.
Appreciate
it. Just,
that.
You know, I don't have too much to reflect on. In the time I've been gone, it's really just been working and laying low and just kind of doing my own thing. But, you know, it's just I get sick of all the talk, too, you know, just all these different personalities. And sometimes I just want to get away from the whole thing and forget about it. Like, because, you know, we really are just entertaining ourselves for the time being, until something happens where we can latch on to some real powerful change, you know, something that comes down the pike. But right now we're all just kind of waiting it out, So it's like, if you're going to be an entertainer, you know, you got to be willing to do it for free, because you're not going to make a living at this, you know?
Well, I don't know. I think that shows like what Renegade puts on, and I mean, Renegade puts a lot of good information out there. There's a lot of people on TalkShoe that put good information out there, and now there's a lot of nut jobs too. But I do understand where you're coming from, like trying to get away, especially from the conflicting personalities and the you know, the infighting. You know, I a lot of times that just sickens me, man. You know, I mean, it absolutely sickens me. So, I mean, yeah, I don't think we want to save the world by. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, I don't think we're gonna save the world by, you know, having discussions, but you have to have the discussions. You have to put the ideas out there before the action comes. So I do believe that shows like yours and networks like Renegade and what your Oracle used to be and things like that, I believe they are laying the foundation. So,
right. I mean, what I was thinking of is what we really need is like all these hosts and personalities and different groups. Like if they could all work together and form like a white nationalist channel, you know, and even if it was just streamlined on the internet, you know, like a media, centralized media type thing, that's got to be the next phase, because you know, that's what's lacking. I mean, radio is good, but I think you know, visual images are more powerful. And the more people see other people saying the same things over and over again, the more it will catch on, and you know, folks will start to just think, oh, think like this. You know, this is not you know, I'm not crazy. You know, this is a lot of millions, you know, thousands of people share these concerns. So that's kind of a long term thing. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but that's what I would like to see.
You know, I think our enemy sees that too, and that's why certain restrictions have been imposed upon Facebook and YouTube and stuff like that. Formats have been changed because I believe they looked at social media and saw, well, hey, man, if we let this go too long, you know, these people that think this way are going to get together and convince other people that they got good ideas, you know. And I believe that, you know, they've made some pretty strong attacks against the internet in general, like with SOPA and people that was, you know, protection from internet piracy and then Stop Online Piracy Acts. You know, they were defeated though, but they will be back. And now, you know, there's a push to make it to where, you know, you have to attach your name to posts and stuff like that, instead of trying to take away the anonymity in order to scare people from saying the things that they don't want to hear. And a lot of it, you know, I don't agree with, but people, you know, and a lot of other folks don't agree with some of the things that I say and believe, but it's still ideas that the enemy does not want out, you know. And I believe that they realize what you and I realize, that if we can keep saying these things and if we can keep pushing these ideas, then there will eventually become a turning point. Either way, I think you're on to something, and I enjoy hearing you. But anyway, that's all I got to say. Dana, I appreciate you taking my call. If you don't mind, you can mute me. But, hey, let me do say one thing, man. As everybody knows, I've got children. Yesterday, one of my dogs had puppies. Man, I was watching the dog have the puppies. But what I was really watching was watching my children watch the dog have puppies. And man, to see the amazement on their in their faces and in their eyes, man, they watched life come into this world. Man, it was one of the greatest things I'd ever seen in my life. I mean, it was pretty cool, really cool. So, I mean, that's the reason why I'm even involved, man, is my children. So, anyway, keep up the good work. Hello? I'm not in the chat, and I don't know if I'm still on or anything. I can't hear Dana. Anyway, going on about the subject of activism, I believe that there are certain groups that are rising in the states. There's going to be certain there are certain groups that are actively working to save save white people. Sometimes they actively work to save a specific white people, such as like the League of the South. They're focused on Southern white Southerners. There's also a pan-Aryanism that's rising in the states and or been pushed for a while, Northwest Front and things like that. Some people call them shields or traps. They may very well be, but there are good ideas being pushed out there. Right now, though, there's a groundswell movement in in Europe, what with Golden Dawn in Greece. UKIP in Britain has taken several seats. They've won some elections, although they're not as hardcore as I would like. I'd probably, if I was English, I'd lean more towards the British National Party. But France has the Generation Identitaire. So right now we're living in very interesting times. I believe we will live long enough to see a turning point. Of course, I'm 33. I may be too old to act by the time the turning point comes. The enemy has really overstepped their bounds. There's no way that they can put the toothpaste back in the tube. And the idea, as far as, you know, the violence of our invaders or the fact that we are the only people that's being forced to accept these individuals that are coming in. We have pushed ideas to where our leaders have traded, are traitors. They're not our leaders, they're traitors. And nobody, no matter what people, nobody likes a traitor. Nobody likes a spy. You know, in all countries in times of war, they would treat you different. They would treat you respectfully, usually, if you're in uniform. But if you were caught being a spy, they'd generally shoot you on sight. And a turncoat was even worse than a spy. So, you know, we've shown that our leaders are our traitors, and that they don't deserve our respect. The United States, as a power, has lost all respect on the world stage, and it's fast losing respect even here at home. You see people from time to time that, you know, speak out against the states and against their policy that you wouldn't expect. You know, just several short years ago, they were, flag-waving patriotards, but now they express disagreement with it and shame. I think that's a good thing. And the more, like the quote-unquote neocons push Americanism, the more foolish they look, the more the Democrats blatantly sell us out, or I shouldn't use the term Democrats. There are pretty decent people that call themselves Democrats. But the quote-unquote left wing sell us out, then the more retarded they look, make themselves look, and the more that they're going to turn people towards us or towards a – maybe not even us, but the more people will look for alternatives. And then when they look for alternatives, they will find us. And they will read well-spoken individuals, people that have good ideas, and they'll think, you know, there's maybe something to that. I'm not a well-spoken individual. I'm just a working-class stiff. But I do know that with my limited education, I finished high school, but with my limited education, I can tell that something's wrong. And we look at our leaders, and they're college educated. They cannot, I mean, there's no way that you can tell me they don't know that what they're doing is destructive. The only conclusion I can come to is they're doing it purposely, which is insanity. So we have an insane system that's intended to genocide us. Right now, it's monetarily beneficial for people to go along with it. But like you stated earlier, or like Dana stated, I don't even know if he's hearing me, but like he stated, they're scared of words. Because here in America, you know, you can't be jailed for just saying things, but you can suffer economic sanctions. You can lose your job. You can lose your reputation. But, you know, people are going to have to get over that. And I believe that people are getting over that. You know, there's certain instances of evidence of it, and unfortunately it's coming. The incident that I'm going to use an example is two Jews, but Donald Sterling makes some remarks about black people, and so he's castigated in the media and loses his team over a thought crime, not because of action. And Mark Cuban, another Jew, he steps out and make some pretty inflammatory statements itself, or those statements that are portrayed as inflammatory. But, you know, maybe it's going to take some white people to do that. Maybe that those examples will set the stage for more whites to take it. I know that the people that I'm speaking to on a day-to-day basis who have really no political influence are, you know, they're just working stiffs like me. They're sick and tired of the system. They know things have to change. Unfortunately, a lot of them don't fully understand. They're not fully awake, but I try to push them in the right direction, speak to them about various instances, various issues. Dana, I hear something moving around. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm back, man.
All right, good, man. I kind of lost you for a while. I don't know if everybody could hear me, but I kind of went on a little monologue there and hope I kind of carried it through. But anyway.
Yeah, Drew said you were on. Drew said you were on. So.
Good deal. Well, all right, bro. If you would, man, just mute me and I'll continue to listen.
All right, man. Let me see if... if this is Frank again, or if he had anything more to add, because there's a 661 number. We'll pull him up.
Okay.
661, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Dana, this is Brian. I just wanted to say real quick, it's good to hear you back on and on the radio show, man.
Oh, yeah, man, it's good to be back. How you been, man?
Yeah. So-and-so, I guess. How have you been doing? I hope everything's okay.
Yeah, it's all right, man. Just some tension within the family, and, you know, I'm just working a lot, trying to get my own place soon. But, yeah, I might be moving out soon. There's a two-bedroom apartment for $600 a month I might get, so. But yeah, man, it's been you know, I've been quiet because just trying to lay low, and you know, now you know, I just got pissed off that you know, I was being attacked for nothing, you know, really just being who I am, I guess, is enough to, you know, make people want to disassociate themselves from anybody within connected to me. So, you know, I'm just like, whatever, man. That's how it is. If this is the kind of thing that we have to deal with,
well, you know, fuck what people think, man. You're a good guy in my book and many other people's books, so.
Yeah, man, it's good to hear that. You know, I just with today we had a Memorial Day, or not Memorial Day, that was D-Day or whatever, you know, and everybody's talking
70th anniversary of D-Day, I believe.
Right, yeah. So, I did have a little thing here to read. But
well, I'll let you go.
You know,
on,
it all really does.
Good from hearing from you. I just saw. I'll let you carry on, okay, brother?
All right. Thanks a lot, Brian.
All right. No problem. Take care.
Andrew, are you on right now as well? Or I get. Let me see here. Well, this is what I wanted to read in regards to D-Day, and not D-Day specifically. Just World War II in general. This was a little document put out by Matt Cole and his New Order group, and it's a nice little thing. It says, "We fought on the wrong side," and this is pretty much a nice quickie. It has now been 50 years since the end of World War II. For many, that conflict seems like so much ancient history. But the anniversary ceremonies and revelry of the military victors at this time remind us that there are those who will not soon let us forget. And so it is fair to ask, why did we, the peoples of America, Canada, England, France, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa, go to war in the first place? Many explanations have been offered. It was to stop dictatorship and aggression, to preserve freedom and democracy, to save the British Empire, to save little countries, etc. When the filter of simple truth is applied, however, everything boils down to a single issue: the pathological desire of certain interested parties to destroy Adolf Hitler and his idea. In other words, World War II was nothing more than a war against Hitler. In this war, all the various interested parties, Bolsheviks, international bankers, reactionaries of all kinds, but especially Jews, discovered that whatever differences they had paled in comparison with their common interest in destroying this man and his cause. And this is kind of like how we see Putin and Obama coming together over Ukraine today. That's kind of what it reminded me of, even though I do tend to lean on the Russian side against America. But clad in a cloak of pretense, this unholy alliance promised that without Hitler, there would be a better world. A world of freedom and democracy, a world without fear and want, in which good would triumph over evil. Just how sincere their pronouncements were can be best judged by the rape, pillage, ethnic cleansing, torture, kangaroo courts, show trials, and slaughter of millions throughout Europe, which took place following liberation. So what kind of world did the victors of 1945 actually give us? Take a look. Take a good look. For five decades, they have had an opportunity to show us their world without Hitler. What kind of world is it? For starters, they have given us an endless series of conflicts, including the Korean and Vietnam Wars, in which countless thousands of lives have been wantonly wasted. They also gave us a Cold War, with its massive expense and squandering of resources. They gave us a world of rat race consumerism, self-fixation, environmental devastation, pollution, and race mixing. They altered the national demography and introduced us to integration, busing, affirmative action, minority quotas, sensitivity training, black history, and the Holocaust. They gave us permissiveness, drugs, MTV, and teen suicide. They gave us safe sex and unsafe streets and gun control. They gave us rock and roll and rape counseling centers. They gave us alternative lifestyles, sodomy, AIDS, filth, perversion, chaos, crime, corruption, dumbing down, and insanity of every kind. This is the kind of world they have given us, and it constitutes an appalling indictment. In no way can we blame Hitler for this world. He was absolutely opposed to this sort of thing, and he fought and sacrificed everything to prevent such a world. But the victors of 1945 fought to destroy this man so that they could bring about their world, which is what we now have. This is what they created in World War II, and for this, they must be held accountable. The year 1945 was a defining moment, a watershed in history, the last great victory of the old order, which decided the kind of world we have today. Everything that is now taking place about the globe is causally linked to the outcome of that great conflict which took place a half century ago. This causal relationship is the underwriting reality behind our present condition, and this condition can never be altered until that fact is generally recognized and we have come to grips with it. In reassessing our participation in the Second World War, we can come to but one conclusion. We fought on the wrong side, and the willingness to admit this simple fact is the necessary first step for any national or racial recovery. Back in 1959, there was a man who did have the courage to recognize this fact and who did realize that we fought on the wrong side against Hitler in World War II. His name was George Lincoln Rockwell. And exactly 40 years after the leader first raised the banner, this great apostle was to raise the fallen standard anew. It is an example for all of us. Although a military phase of National Socialist struggle ended in 1945, the war declared by World Jewry against Hitler in 1933 has not ended. Today, this enemy, in the pathological pursuit of its messianic designs, continues to wage war against the leader. And so the fight is joined, and this time we have an opportunity to be on the right side in this ongoing war. And instead of fighting against Hitler, we can now fight with him and for his new order. No greater honor or privilege can one ever have. You know, I recognize that, you know, there were mistakes made, and, you know, it's not completely black and white, but when we reflect and see the kind of world that we got as a result of making the choice to be pawns for the Jews, you know, against National Socialism, this is what we got. So, I mean, it's different levels of awakening. We're dealing with a lot of people who are angry at the government, angry at the system, but, you know, making that final realization that we've been used in the worst way to commit the worst possible atrocities against our own race, this has led to, you know, the suicidal state that we are in as a culture. So I just wanted to read that to remind people while they're celebrating D-Day and the victory over Nazism. But, yeah, so we got another call here, an 804 number. Let me pull him up. 804, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, man. This is, just call myself Mike, calling from 804 area code, but yeah, man, I've called the show a few times. I really enjoy the work that you all do, because I get a, gives me a different perspective on things, but I'll tell you what, man, logic is irresistible, and, you know, you always have to ask yourself at the end of the day what makes sense and what is BS. And, you know, Hitler was a great man. And it's just it's sad that we can't see that over on this side of the Atlantic. We're not allowed to because, like the guy says in the thing that you just read, we're so invested in being the champion of the world from World War II. But it's all propaganda. It's all propaganda. I mean, our soldiers going over there in World War II, that really happened, but really they were forced to. They were drafted in there. They didn't really have a choice as to whether or not they wanted to go. Yeah.
Well, they had a choice, but it was, you know, it was the pressure. And at the time, you know, the indoctrination and the reaction, the emotional reaction to Pearl Harbor, in the same way that people reacted to 9/11, you know, and it's just unfortunate that you think back then, the United States really was a great country. I mean, they had a lot to fight for. So it wasn't hard to, you know, to vilify an enemy because, you know, they were basically living in a paradise. It would be much harder today for them to recruit, you know, massive numbers of people to go and fight in a war when, you know, there's so little to hold on to or to be proud of here, you know. So I think that's the difference, is that back then it was a white society. It was a, you know, it was a pretty strong country, and you know, that's one of the reasons why they were so easily fooled. Yeah,
it's amazing that, well, I don't know, money is power, but media control is real power. That's just the way it is. But yeah, you know that article you just read, Hitler was against decadence in society. He didn't like that kind of a thing. And, you know, you can only judge by the events of the modern day. And, yes, we did fight on the wrong side in World War II.
You know, it's almost like you know, you have to admit there's a problem first. And,
yeah,
you know, if Americans can't admit that, you know, that's the ultimate test. It's the ultimate litmus test for whether they're revolutionary thinking or if they're totally consumed by conservative patriotism, you know. Like, if they, you know, because I get people who come in all the time, you know, and they're against gun control, and they'll say, yeah, we're heading down towards where Hitler was. And then I have to tell them, well, no, he actually encouraged gun ownership. So, and that always throws them for a loop.
Seriously,
there is a
patriotard group out there. You know, there's no doubt about it. But their indoctrination is so thorough because, you know, a lot of certain age groups, their grandparents fought that war. You know, it's almost like going against their family to say that.
Absolutely.
That they fought on the wrong side. So, you know, their indoctrination runs so deep. It's so difficult to overcome. But still, like we said before, logic is irresistible, really. You know, if you can be that objective. But it's difficult for people to maintain objectivity because their emotions get involved. And, you know, it's just the way it goes.
Well, you know, then there's a big debate over whether to even bother using World War II or Hitler, National Socialism, as even a means of waking people up, because so many of them are too far gone. But my attitude is that, you know, the hardcore people are going to be able to brush off that propaganda and programming. And, you know, if they haven't come to that conclusion on their own, then, you know, you should at least see if you can break through with them. It's the same thing with Christianity. I mean, there's major breakthroughs that need to happen. And if they can't do it, then you have to just kind of approach it from a racial angle and don't even involve, you know, history or World War II. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to that, because it's our ideals or fake ideals versus, you know, a racial vision. And it was Germany that had that vision, you know, and we're living in the result and the consequence of fighting that. So, I mean, everything that's happened goes back to the last 50 years. So, whether it's immigration, whether it's race, whether it's eugenics, whether it's, you know, anything, all of it became a total cultural Marxist takeover because, you know, we were duped into fighting them. So,
and World War II, you know, I've heard people say that their whole propaganda campaign, that the basis of it is the Holocaust. And that is the basis of it, I think. I think, and I remember people on this show saying that that's why whenever someone questions the Holocaust, they go wild on them, like Ernst Zundel and people like that, you know.
Right. Well, the Holocaust is huge. I mean, it's but the funny thing about it is that you know, it wasn't even really ingrained in the public consciousness until later. You know, they didn't really start drumming up all this propaganda until Israel, you know, was doing all these land grabs and starting wars like the 67 war. If you really go back, you know, it was used as a propaganda tool for Israel, basically. At the end of the war, there wasn't that much talk about the Holocaust. I mean, they didn't know that there were camps and there were a lot of people called DPs, displaced persons. But as an institution, you know, it didn't really develop until, you know, a couple decades afterwards. And that I would contend it was to justify Israeli aggression and to also push the diversity and multiculturalism thing, to push guilt. I mean, it has multiple, you know, things behind it, reasons. But, you know, the question is whether to either even bother trying to get people to admit that it's largely a fabrication, or whether you should just you know, just talk about other issues, because a lot of people, you know, there's a different way to go about it. You can say, yeah, there were Jews that died, but a lot of people died. Millions of people died in World War II. You know, it's that's one way to just jump right over it. You can always just say Stalin killed 30 million people. We don't have 300 Holocaust movies about Stalin, so.
Yeah.
You know, in the History Channel, I mean, the way they have these, just show after show after show about Hitler. I mean, it's almost like they don't want him to die. You know, he really is a huge part of, you know, they just keep attacking him, vilifying him, but it's almost to the point where you got to wonder, like, you know, I mean, don't they realize there's gonna be people who actually are going to start looking into these things and think, you know, maybe he was right after all? I mean, it's I don't know. They just had this thing on. I don't know if you saw it. They had this thing on. You know, it was Hitler, Stalin, and Churchill, and going back to World War I and how that made them into the men that they became, and how that affected World War II. I mean, but it's almost every week they have another thing on there. You know, it's they just can't drop it.
But they never really get into the philosophy of his and what he actually did, you know. All they ever say is, you know, like William Luther Pierce said, he was a crazed carpet chewer. But something else I wanted to bring up was South Africa. Is it really as racially tense over there as what you hear on the internet, stuff like that?
Well, I don't know, man. I really don't know. You know, there's definitely thousands of interracial black and white crimes there, rapes. But you know, if it really was that tense, why wasn't there some kind of a race war? I mean, it never happened, you know. So who knows?
I think you see white nationalism there a little bit, it seems like. I don't know, what are the hot spots for white nationalism in the world today?
They're everywhere. I mean, it's white nationalism is really kind of an American thing. You've got Americans who are white nationalists because that's all that makes sense for us to be, because we're of mixed European nationalities and backgrounds, you know. But then you have ethno-nationalism in Europe for each specific group. And you have, you know, South Africa. I mean, they obviously have to be racially aware because they're surrounded by blacks. But they basically gave their country away. You know, they handed it over to the blacks. You know, so what did they think was going to happen? I mean, it's, you know, and the Jews
really
had a huge part in that with the ANC. And, you know, that was a whole nother, basically just like integration over here in the 60s. It was the same kind of thing. So
that was
they
really
convinced
to convince them to give their country away was really, that's a testament to the power of propaganda, I think. And when you think about it, that was, you know, that was the first generation that had been completely propagandized by television in South Africa. Once they came of age, then it was changed. But I'm sorry I interrupted you. You were talking South Africa, and then,
we
talked Greeks.
I mean, the amazing thing about it is how they could convince a people who were strong, who were proud, who, you know, had their accomplishments and their sense of destiny and identity and who they were, and to just throw that all away, to just give it all up and, you know, convince us that we're all individuals, that race doesn't exist, that everybody's equal, you know, that, I mean, it's just, it's insane. I mean, a person back in the 1700s, who was just a regular, normal, intelligent, educated person, would be an extremist today, or a radical. I mean, that's how far society has gone. So, but
and
they've made everyone weaker too. They've made everybody like sissified too. I mean, it's the effeminate process, you know, this modern society where everybody is so gentle and meek. You know, it's like the Christian program. So, I mean, in a sense, in a way, when it comes down to it, you know, when we have to stand up against the system as it falls, I mean, we're going to be a lot stronger than we think, because a lot of the average people out there are, you know, can barely even, you know, do anything physical. I mean, you just look at the way that there are drones out there and so reliant on technology and everything else. So I do have a lot of hope, man. I really do.
Well, the internet is the greatest weapon for that. But this nationalism, that has to be a feather in your cap anytime you see it, because, you know, like Golden Dawn in Greece, they're holding seats in parliament, and it's in other European countries too. I forget what the name of the organization is in France, but they have those organizations there.
France is the National Front, I think, Le Pen. And she just got like third place or something. It's huge. I mean, she's on her way to being the president. So, you know, and then Hungary's got the Jobbik party. I mean, every country has a party. You know, there's parties in Finland, parties in Sweden, there's the NPD in Germany. You know, that's why we got to get something together here in this country. We really do. I don't know how we're going to do it or what form it's going to take. You know, we have American Third Position or American Freedom Party. There's a number of different little parties and things. But someone's got to fill this vacuum when the common man, the average white person, realizes that the Republicans are shot as a party and there's nobody else to fill that void. You know, that's when you know, we don't want it to go into the Tea Party. We want it to become we need a white nationalist party or a secessionist movement. Somebody, you know, because that's what we are, separatists. We have to pull away. And the ultimate end goal has to be forming an independent white ethno-state in the continental United States. That's got to be the main goal of everything we do. But that's a long-term thing. You know, that's not going to happen. Yeah.
Would it be, in your mind, what is your vision of a future U.S.?
My vision is the U.S. is gonna break apart like the Soviet Union did, and just fracture into separate enclaves and balkanize, and you know you're gonna have white areas, you're gonna have Mexican areas, you're gonna have black areas, you're gonna have areas that are diverse and that are mixed, and then you're gonna have racially separate zones. I mean, that's probably what's going to happen. It'll be a natural process. I would basically look towards, the West Coast and the East Coast are going to be the mixed areas. The Midwest and areas of the South will probably be the white, that would be the white lands. And, the Southwest is going to go back to the Mestizo, Aztlán, because I mean they got the numbers and they've been pumping out kids. I mean they got the demographics. Demographics is destiny. So that's what I think is going to happen. Now how it goes from there, that remains to be seen. Can we have a Reconquista? Well, we got to get our shit together first before we could even think of something like that. But
yeah.
But anyway, man, you mentioned the Golden Dawn, and I do have something right here on them that I wanted to bring up. This is pretty recent. It's like just a couple days ago. Here it is right here. I guess Golden Dawn, with the middle class determined to avenge the government for policies that have seen its living standards collapse, the far right has understood strong-arm tactics are no longer necessary. This is on Mind Weapons Ragnarok. So I guess they're trying to reshape their image and put middle-class professionals in an effort to broaden their appeal. So they got university professors, lawyers, surgeons, business people, and a former NATO commander even. So that's actually a very smart move.
Yeah.
On their part, because they're painted as like a bunch of skinheads, by the media. So
yeah, but that Golden Dawn party, you're right, that is a smart move, and but somewhere in the background, they have some very good leadership. I think the moves that they make seem to be very well planned out, and they kind of have a long-term vision, it seems, and they take steps to further that cause.
Yeah, well, the reason I like them the most is because they have the closest thing to National Socialism in an organized party, because a lot of the other parties are just kind of called regular nationalists. They don't have the Golden Dawn has a racial vision beyond, a Hellenistic Greek idea. And they understand, they come right from, the sympathizers going back to World War II. You had General Metaxas was pro-Hitler. If Mussolini didn't make the mistake of invading Greece, Greece would have been allied to Germany, potentially. Could have happened. But, I have... let me see. I wanted to pull something else up here, too, about the Golden Dawn. Did you have anything more you wanted to add, man? Because your connection is...
fading. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think that right now they're the model. Golden Dawn is the model because they've had the most success. And that's all I wanted to say. But if you could just mute me, I'll just listen for the rest of the time.
All right, thanks for your call, man. Absolutely. Golden Dawn is the model. I just don't know if it would work here, but you know, I'm not saying that it won't. I mean, here's another thing off Mind Weapons. Breaking news: thousands of nationalists gather outside Greek Parliament, calling for immediate release of Golden Dawn political prisoners. And they got a picture here with a bunch of Greeks with Greek flags. Thousands of friends, supporters, and members of Golden Dawn have gathered outside Parliament in Athens, demanding the immediate release of the political prisoners. So I guess I don't know how well they actually did in the election, but they do have some seats. I'm not following it as close as I should be, but I can tell you right now, the important thing is that they're making a lot of inroads into the regular community of Greeks, and that's when you get the people behind you, that's where the power comes from. So, I mean, that's kind of good news. And, you know, just the other day I was in a Greek restaurant, you know, these little pizza places they have, and I walked in there. I saw there was a Greek guy with a Greek hat on. I started talking to him, and, you know, he made a comment about how if you want to keep your country pure or ethnically what it's, you know, always been.
Hey, I think I just got unmuted. I can't hear Dana there, but I don't know if you guys can hear me in the chat. I think somebody was able to unmute me, but it sounds like Dana got dropped there again. I don't know if anybody else is. Is anybody else on this call? I don't think anyone else is. Now I feel bad because I can try to possibly find something to talk about. Are you guys able to hear me? Oh, says that Ann, Drew put me on. I guess you guys can hear me. Shit. I mean, I have some stories that I wanted to talk about, but I wanted to talk to Dana. It sounds like what he's going through is kind of messed up, and I wanted to make sure he was on to tell him what I wanted to say about it. You know, because you know, I think it was more of a somber tone because. You know, it sounds like, you know, some of this is coming or, you know, spilling into his real life, you know, or, you know, his real world life of, Dana there. And, you know, it's really terrible. You know, I sometimes look to that day, like, when is it going to happen to me? You know, when is some, you know, Jew at work or someone going to come up and be like, hey, what's this jackal's den, you know, or you know, what were these things you said on the internet or something, you know, and, you know, there was a quote I wanted to make sure I told Dana when he was on here, but I'll just repeat it if I have to tell him. I wanted to say to Dana that, you know, there's like this old quote. I don't know where it comes from. I think it comes from like that old movie, the Seven Samurai, I think. And the quote goes something. This is not exact. This is kind of off, but it still is relevant though. And that's you know, like there's like the lap dog and the wolf. You know, and the lap dog sits inside by the warm fire every day, and always has a full plate and. You know, eats all nicely and sits in the master's lap and gets stroked all day. You know, but the wolf gets to roam the countryside. You know, free to do as he pleases. You know, living in anticipation of his next kill and his next meal. And I wanted to say that you know, Dana is one of the wolves for sure. You know, putting out his real name, you know, and these people are going to attack him in his real life, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes a lot of guts to stand up to these Jews, especially with your real name and everything. And like I said, I'm waiting for the day too. You know, like when is it going to happen to me? And I can assure everyone in this chat that it's going to happen to you too someday. You know, you're not going to be able to hide behind that that screen name forever. You know, so one day someone's going to say something to you. But you know, I don't know. I think you got to still just stand tall and proud and. You know, and it's guys like Dana that encourage others to do the same thing and, you know, to step up and spit in the Jew's eye, man. You know, that's what we got to do. When you stand up to them, it scares them. It gets them scared, you know. They don't like seeing the Goyim wake up and, you know, want to fight back. Do I have anyone else on here with me? I hear some noise.
Yeah, I'm back here, Nick. How's it going, brother?
Hey, what's up, man? General Tychus, man.
Well, yeah, that's it, man. The Aryan natives are getting restless.
Yeah, I was hoping. Did you hear my quote about the wolf and the lapdog?
No, I just I heard you. I heard you saying something about spitting in Jews' eyes, and that's where I came back in.
I led up to it because I wanted to make sure I told you, but I was basically saying that, like, there's a lap dog, you know, that, you know, the lap dog is fed well, he gets petted by the master and sleeps by the fire, but the wolf roams the countryside in freedom, you know, free to do what he wants as he anticipates his next kill and his next meal. And I was saying that you're one of the wolves because you're willing to go out there and step up to the Jew, you know, right to the kike's face, you know. So.
Oh, absolutely, man. And I do it in a way that it's amazing, man. I was walking around a reservoir the other day with a friend of mine. He's actually he's Peruvian. He doesn't look European at all. He's pretty brown skinned, but he's a metalhead. I've known him a long time. And we were walking around. There was a woman walking. She looked Middle Eastern, so I wanted to find out what she was, and I guess she was Jordanian. And the first thing she asked me was if I was Jewish, believe it or not, because, you know, like this is an area where it's heavily concentrated, lot of Jews. When she asked me that, I was like, no, not at all, you know, and once, you know, what
you're like,
said
ew,
that,
oh, God, no, fuck that.
Yeah, and she laughed at that reaction, you know, because you won't get that from most people, most Americans. And once she realized, you know, that we were cool, she really unloaded, man. She was pretty rabid, radical, anti-Jew. I mean, so it was fun. I mean, to just walk around with her and just you know, it's just a shame that you can't get this with Americans, with regular white Americans. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, they're lap dogs, Dana. They're fucking lap dogs. That's why I wanted to mention that quote, man, because it's a quote that's
going, man.
Yeah, it's stuck with me for many years, and you know, I always always remember that when I think of these middle class, you know, liberal whites, man, they're lap dogs. You know, they sit around, they got a nice full plate, they get to watch football and basketball every day and drink Bud Light, you know, in their McMansions, you know, so they don't give a shit about what happens to regular poor white folks like, you know, me or you or most of the people here at Renegade. And in the struggle, too. But, you know, that's why, I mean, because from what it sounds like, you know, you're probably, you know, having trouble with, you know, maybe your family or whoever, you know, people in your real life coming after you for these kind of views. And it's freaking ridiculous, man. It sucks, though, because I think it's, like, right at the breaking point. You know what I mean? We actually did this great show of Jackals
Den
a couple nights ago. I don't know if you listened to it at all, but we did a Jackals Den a couple days ago, which I actually haven't really been doing them. I've been doing, like, one a month. But we did one a couple nights ago, and it was really fun because, you know, we actually – Brian, I think, was going around, like, posting the show in, like, I don't know, it was, like black – chats or something, and so one of this black lady called in, but I think we're at the point where, like, we're able to just now start talking about this in real life, not the fucking internet, but to, you know, to actual people on the street, you know, and people are starting to really open up to it. I had a funny story about this debate I did where I said the Federal Reserve could print more money, and everyone started laughing in my whole classroom. There was all these young kids too. It was like they knew what a scam it was. And then, you know, I was at a liquor store, and the guy, you know, he knew who the Rothschilds were and stuff, and it was just pretty amazing, you know, just to see regular poor white people, you know, aware of this kind of thing.
I mean, every day I get somebody mentioning the Illuminati to me. You know, it's like, and I mean, sure, it's somewhere to start with, at least. You know, you can start with that. But, you know, the guy I work with, he made a comment. He was like, yeah, we can solve the energy crisis by using all the friction from the founding fathers turning in their graves. You know, that was pretty good. So, I mean, but, yeah, we got, looks like Frank might be back on. I don't know.
Oh, nice. He called in the other night when we did that show. He called in.
That's why I'm back. I missed Frank. I couldn't take it anymore. It was too long. And sure enough, he calls in on the first show back. So that's great, man.
Yeah.
Epic.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I almost felt kind of bad for you, because when you started out there, you know, you were saying, you know, you got these, you know, problems and stuff going on, and I was just like, shit, man, is he going to be able to do a show all the time? I mean, you know, I understand if you can't, but, you know, I was just, you know, I was so glad to see your picture back up there. I was like, yeah, you know, Dana's back, you know, he's going to start doing shows again, because, you know, I always enjoyed listening to him and stuff, and you know, I know what it's like. It's kind of funny. Like, I don't even think, like, because you were saying that someone had overheard you calling into a show or something, right, with the Golden Dawn guys or something. And, you know, what's funny is I only have one roommate. He's actually, I'm cool with him. He's a cool dude and everything. But I always wonder if he's ever heard me. I don't ever think he has, is the funny thing. I mean, you know, we kind of just go our separate ways and stuff, but I always wonder if, like, he's going to come up to me one day or something and be like, are you a Nazi or some shit, you know, with what most people would probably say or something, you know, like,
Skinhead.
Well, you know, the best...
Like, oh, I heard... Yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, you heard that story about the... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, you like, it's going to come up one day and say something like, you know, heard you one day, like, talking about, like, Jews and, you know, groids or something. I don't know. It's, that's all I wanted to say.
I mean, when people ask me about the swastika, you know, I just say it's an ancient European symbol. It's a Greek symbol. It's, you know, not only Greek, but it was used by almost every European culture, and non-Indo-European as well. So, I mean, it's just an ancient symbol, and that's how you, you know, you just refer to archaeology.
I mean, yeah, like those old...
But,
old...
yeah, I think we got...
Oh, sorry?
I mean, I took the time... When I was in college, I took the time to photocopy pictures of ancient swastikas found in Greece, found in Troy, in Turkey, found, you know, in Rome, you know, basically all over. You know, it was the Germanic. It was used as like a ruin too, kind of. It was just, I mean, it's just a universal symbol for our race. So, you know, that's to think that they've turned that into the worst symbol of the world is so sickening. I mean, it's
becoming comical, Dana. That's what I keep telling people. And you know, I love that speech you played at the beginning by Alex Kurtajic. I think his name is. I'm not like that familiar with him, but he sounds like a good guy. But in that speech though, you know, some of the really good things I heard him say is he said, you know, we need to stop acting like this, like the losers, you know, like we're just waiting. I mean, even though I know I actually kind of agree with the worse is better thing, but you know, that we need to be more positive, and we need to be like shining examples of like the success of our movement, you know. and the positive impact that can
yeah,
that
I mean,
have.
We got to realize, yeah, we're up against overwhelming odds, right? But there is something to say for the idea of willpower and just mind over matter, and the idea of how you can shape your reality just by believing in it, you know, just by acting. If you just act, present yourself as if you are victorious, eventually you will be. I mean, you might lose, but if you go into the game thinking that you already lost, it's like they say, attitude is the most important
thing.
And
just like I was saying earlier, something I wanted to say was that, you know, I mentioned a little while ago that you know, this is probably it's going to happen to all of us sooner or later. You know, we're going to have to deal with these antis in real life at some point or another. And if you were to act like the loser, you know, you would cower in fear and say, oh, I'm not racist, you know, and start blubbering like a big fat baby, you know, the second someone says, are you racist, you know? And it would be like, when instead you should, you know, stand tall, stand proud, come back with a good argument, defend yourself just to the fullest, and not be afraid of these people, man. That's what they love. They love the fear in our eyes, you know, when they throw that charge out of being, you know, you're a Nazi or you're racist, it's what they love, man. These liberals and the left and these elite whites and these Jews and all these other assholes, they love. Yeah, they love seeing us, cower in fear every time they throw their charges out at us, you know.
Yeah, well, the worst thing you can do is say, no, I'm not a racist. That's the worst thing you can do. Because
yeah, the best thing
you can say
is define racism.
Exactly, define race. Yeah, you say, yeah, I believe in race. I believe in blood. I believe in preserving who I am and where we came from, I don't believe in, oppressing or discriminating other races. Yeah.
Yeah, well, right. You know what's funny is that
yeah.
the definition... sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as a joke, coming back on the show, I was going to say that, you know, now I've totally changed and I believe in equality and that we're all the same and... we're all just one race. We're all just one race. So.
Oh, hey, that's not typical of the general, man. Yeah. No, I'm glad to see you still, you know, standing up and, not just, going away forever or something. You know, I remember just a week or two ago, I was in the chat and I put up like a little sad face. I'm like, when the hell is Dana coming back, man? You know, and then, here you are, man. It's great, dude. It's, you can't ever back down, man. I mean, even I know it's got to be so rough, man, to have your own family breaking your balls about this. But, it actually is just another sign of, you know, true strength, you know, and willpower and fortitude to be able to even, keep standing up, you know, keep staying firm in your beliefs, even when your own family is giving you a hard time
right.
about it. You know?
My own mother tried to pull the internet modem connection from me, so I was using a proxy server. Drew got on here with another connection. But basically, we're men against time. That's what it is. We're against the entire period of time that we're living in right now, the age.
I joke around all the time that, like, I swear my soul is from like a medieval English farmer or something. Like, I wasn't supposed to be born in this fucking time, you know, and I just gotta survive.
Yeah.
And fight against the tide. But...
You know, we got Bluten Boden on here. I think he wanted to. I want to bring him up because I have met him in person. Blute, is that you?
Am I unmuted?
Yeah, 717.
Yeah.
Hello.
Is this Bluten Boden?
Yeah, I mean, can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
What's going on, brother?
Yeah, we can hear you.
How's it going?
Not much, guys. Just staring at one of the dippers. I don't know which one, the bigger, the little. Drinking some whiskey, listening to you guys talk. I didn't really have anything specific to say, which is why I'm glad you brought me on while Nick was on, because I didn't want it to be just a dialogue between us two, because I like to call in and just chime in when I think of something to say. But it was great to hear you on Renegade, Dana. Really excited when Kyle mentioned that you were going to be on, and especially to see your picture. I know you're not totally committed or capable of doing one consistently on a weekly basis, but I know you're having some familial issues and that, and you know, it's kind of, in all truthfulness, a little depressing to hear, but I don't discourage you from talking about it. This is the place to do it. People here who listen and come in the chat will give you support, and that's exactly what needs to happen. And you know, it's just been a night of people calling in, telling you they're glad to hear you on the network, which is exactly why I called in. Like I said, I don't have anything specific to say. I just wanted to say it's good to hear you talking. And,
well, yeah, man.
It was good.
Well, hey, you guys are
meeting you.
Yeah, dude, it was an honor to meet you, man. And you guys are my family, really. That's how I look at it. You know, yeah, you may lose family, you may lose friends, but you will make new friends. You'll have a new family. I mean, it's like, you know, you can try to not go out of your way to, you know, alienate everybody from you. You know, if you're not an asshole about it, the people who are meant to stay in touch with you will. But, you know, if people are going to, you know, just kind of, you know, act like you just don't exist anymore because, you know, you're evil, then screw them, man. I mean, you just forget them. Because, you know,
yeah,
they can't be saved.
Everybody
can't be
saved. They usually can't think for themselves, man. And it's sad, but, you know, they're not reachable. But that's just the way you have to deal with.
Well, I was going to say, when we were talking...
Blue, you know, it's...
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Is that George?
No, go ahead, Nick. Go ahead.
Yeah,
oh,
me.
I just wanted to say, though, because just to, you know, go on the point that you were making there, that it was just funny because we were talking to this black lady. I think her name was, like, Kimberly or something. And,
yeah, her
you know,
name was Kimberly.
Yeah, it wasn't some, you know, psychotic hate fest, you know, and she,
no.
It seemed like by the time she got off, you know, it, maybe she learned a little more about the slave trade and the Jew.
Yeah.
And, I think it's the, you know, I wouldn't suggest any kind of entangling alliances or anything, but, I think it's great if we wake up, at least some, you know, non-whites to the Jew, to at least curb some of the hate that they have for regular poor whites like us, you know. It's definitely effective and it works.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh
yeah,
absolutely. I've always said that, man. Hey, you know, Blue. I was gonna say it was kind of funny because I was listening to when they were attacking, you know, American Nationalist Network was attacking Kyle. Everybody was kind of going after Kyle, and you know, they were attacking Renegade, and they brought up something you said in a chat room or something about you know, white nationalists should
bitches.
Have you know, polygamy or something like that. It was kind of funny, man. I was laughing, like, whatever.
No, they,
I mean,
it's really weird, to be truthful on the record, this should be known to some people listening. That whole thing was really odd. First of all, Ronnie Martin is married to a Cherokee. I don't care how many people say he's not. And there's articles of him being a chief tribal director for this thing online, in his name, talking out against racism and that stuff. But it's funny because Mike Sledge was brought on as a witness. And the quote you're talking about was not polygamy. It was way more crude and disgusting than that. It was talking about having sex with women and dumping them and fuck them, blah, blah, blah. It was totally misogynistic. And the funny thing is, it's really weird about that, is those things were said in the Renegade chat by somebody, but months ago, months and months prior to that show that they did on ANN. And it was really weird that they attributed it to me, and even that they had this on, like, on record, like, to repeat.
Right.
And then Mike came on right after Rodney Martin read these quotes that I read in the chat. I'm in the chat all the time. And I comment on their Facebook page saying, like, that, I read that, but it wasn't me. And they're like, oh, it's funny, you remember it. No, it's not, because I'm in there all the time. I admit it. I don't have a license. I don't have a job. I'm in the chat all the time. But my point is, right after Rodney Martin read these quotes that I didn't say, someone else said, Mike calls in right afterward, and Rodney's married to an Indian. Mike has a Jew kid, and here comes Mike directly after these fake quotes, misattributed quotes are read, and says the stuff about how I said this other stuff about.
I mean,
lowering the age of consent for sex, and it was something that I quoted the Amazing Atheist in the chat room on. So it's just a total smear campaign against Renegades by people.
I mean,
that
was part of the whole. You know, this was why I kind of just bowed out of the whole thing, because I just couldn't take it anymore. It was I couldn't keep track of how many people would, you know, it's like, first of all, if you have a problem with somebody, don't take it out on air. You know, don't just bring all
don't
the dirty laundry out, you know, because it don't make it public. I mean, just send them a private message or whatever. But when it gets into, you know, and Rodney would say, you know, we shouldn't be getting into these internet podcast pissing contests. But that's exactly what it seemed like was going on, you know. And it's like, you know, look, we're not in competition here. We all really are trying to – we have the same ideals, the same
ideally,
you know, ultimate goal. I mean, it's like, what's the – you know, why – I mean, it just the whole thing was – sensationalist and,
ideally,
you know, bringing
ideally
it down.
That's true.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Dana. Ideally,
yeah,
that's true, and a lot of people complain about so-called infighting, but I'm sorry, man. Like, when I think people are full of shit, and it's not just my ego getting in the way, where I'm just making it personal, when I truly believe that there's something fishy about these people, like Sebastian E. Ronan, dude, all he does is talk shit. That's it. He doesn't do anything but talk shit on people, and, like, American white nationalists to him are, you know, we're all the same, and we're basically the same as the neocons to him. You know, we're all a bunch of Merkin retards, you know. Like, I don't consider infighting when I believe that the people are – I think my opinion is Rodney Martin is a government shill. Like, his article says he had a position in the federal, local, and state government, okay? I think he's a shill. It's like Mike Sledge has a few kids. I think that is – was just an ego, right? What's that feedback?
I mean, this is exactly what I, you know, this is exactly what I didn't want to do tonight, but I'll say this much. You know, the main problem is that it seems like all these people are in competition with each other.
I just
and
don't
by
think it's
attacking someone else, you're gonna, you know, promote your own network and move ahead and get more listeners. But retarded.
Dana,
we're all appealing
I'm just
to
saying,
the same.
You're saying that it's infighting. But you're saying it's infighting that we all are on the same. We all want the same thing. I'm saying I believe these people are pretending to want something that they don't really want it. I'm not saying anything about Renegade. I'm not even a host at Renegade, so that's my honest belief. Like, I don't trust Rodney Martin or Sebastian Ronan. I think it's just a fucking retard. I know. Look, I'm like,
I mean, I've had Ronan.
Like,
I've interviewed Ronan, and, you know, when it comes to his ideas and, you know, what he's written, you know, I agree with it. But when it comes to his personality and how he carries himself and the way he just attacks people all the time, you know, that's what bothers me, is that, you know, it's like, you know, he's saying things that we all know are true, but it doesn't make him the prophet or the messiah. I mean, we all realize that America has to break up. You know, nobody is flying the American flag trying to, you know, bring back, you know,
what, the Christian Republic?
We talk shit.
You know what I mean?
We talk shit on America, too. I talk shit on America. So to be told, as an American racialist who says, look, I don't hate my allied grandfather, but he was not the member of the greatest generation, for me to correct the path of my subset of our race and then to have him say it's not good enough and just keep talking shit on me, that's unacceptable to me. You know, we're trying to recorrect the pathway here, and basically he's saying, if you're from America, you're no good. No, you can't contribute anything by just every, you know, if you're American, you're shit. So, you know, that's my feeling towards him, you know. All he does is shit on American racialists, and there's a change. I mean, there's a change in consciousness. There's a change in awareness of reality, of true history, and things are changing, and he's behind. He's backward. I mean, it's frustrating, man. Like, I'm tired of – it's not a big deal.
As far as he goes or other personalities or you name it, I mean, really, I found myself in this position where, you know, it's almost like everybody's fighting. I mean, it seemed to me like, you know, it's always like a game of who started it. He said that he said this first, and then it just becomes this huge, drama. And yeah, I mean, it's like a cycle.
Be like that, though.
And you know, I mean, my attitude is that, look, you know, just don't do it. Just refrain from doing it. If they're gonna do it, let them do it. It makes them look dumb. I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, we all look stupid if we're all, you know, using ad hominem attacks and just personalizing everything and, you know, making it about this. It should be strictly stay on message and don't get off it. If you have a disagreement about something, you know, then you air it out wherever you have to do it, but not online. We have to have unity. I'm sorry. I mean, it's the only way we're gonna move forward, because all these different because then, like, say you want to work with somebody, right, and they're a good person, but they're allied to this guy, you know, or they're associated with that group, you know, and it's like, it's dead on arrival if people can't put principles over, you know, their petty squabbles, so.
But Dana, what do you do when you, as an individual, hold the mentality or as a code of conduct that you're putting forth right now? When you try to do that, but I mean, doesn't there come a point when there is a smear campaign where you have to counteract the propaganda against you? I mean, I read a thing of Matt Parrott where he tried to do that, and Ronan kept attacking him, and he wanted to ignore it, but at some point he said it just, you know, it became, you get to a point where you can't ignore it. I mean, and you talk about unity, and I agree.
Yeah, well,
but what I'm saying is, sometimes there might be the possibility where you might wish these people were on our side, and they say a lot of good stuff. But when it comes down to it, even if they're not being conspiratorial or subversive, their behavior, at the end of the day, actions speak louder than words. Their behavior, despite the party line and the points of their party, might be good, and some of their things that they say. At the end of the day, if their behavior is such that it's, you know, harmful and pernicious to the movement as a whole, doesn't there become a point where you have to counteract this negative influence and sink to their level?
Well,
I'm not opposed.
My
hands dirty, you know.
There does come. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I'm just saying, my point here is that, you know, when you do that, when you engage, you're falling into that trap. You're getting sucked into what they want, and you know, it's like, you know, you're actually validating what they're saying, because it just becomes like, if you just ignore and refuse to deal with it, it's like, you know, you look more serious. You look more serious. It, you know, as soon as people tune in and they start hearing, oh, this guy is got dirt over here, this guy's that, he's, well, I heard this, you know, and it's all this, it's all rumors and speculation and just, it's just nonsense. I mean, like, now I've met you in person, and we have a connection, because we've actually met each other, you know, but I'm just thinking
I totally agree with you. A lot of these people
on the internet, if they actually met in person, you know, this most of this would go away, and it's a maturity level that you have to have. And you know, if somebody attacks me, you know, you get emotional about it, and then you get drawn into that, and it just damages the movement as a whole, is all I'm saying. You know, it's like it's just like we're wasting our time and our energy on things that could be better spent elsewhere. But there are people who do engage in those attacks all the time, and it's just unfortunate because these are supposed to be people who share our values, our entire motivation for everything that we do, and that's where, I just throw my hands up in the air and I'm like, screw it. I mean, if these people are going to just, behave like this, I mean, it's, you're herding cats. I mean, I don't have time to herd cats,
I'm sorry, Nick, you want to say something?
Oh, I just wanted to say, it just goes back to that speech. That speech was so good at the beginning from Alex Krutajic. Is that, it's all about staying positive, man. And I mean, and I guess, to actually kind of agree with Blute there, what he was saying before about, sometimes you have to call some people out on some things, which, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's kind of back and forth. You probably shouldn't, air out dirty laundry and stuff. But, I would say as long as you have, core rules, that, can't be broken, right? Because for a movement like this, right, wouldn't it be, one main rule would be, you can't be having sex. This is a no-brainer, but you shouldn't be having sex or children with non-whites, right? I mean, we can all agree on that. If that happens, I've actually gotten to the point with this where I thought I could, I have nothing against people like John Friend or whoever, but, I mean, when you got people who have mixed-race children, man, it's gotten to the point where it's like they just got to be shunned from the struggle. There's nothing that can be done about it. And, I mean, basic rules like that, and, I mean, yeah, you can come to your own conclusion about what other rules there might be, Go ahead.
I mean, that raises another question, though, about, what about people who did it in the past before they were racially aware, and then they became racially aware. I mean, it's like there's a lot of different nuances to it, and my general attitude is that there aren't enough of us. Even if this person's tainted or that person did that or whatever, if they're saying the right things, we need that right now because we need as many people saying those things to spread that.
Well, here's some of the trouble.
Yeah.
I just want to say some of the trouble with that, though, is that, there's a perfect example of this. I'm sure you probably listened to this when Kyle was on, I don't know the name of the show, man, but he was on this black show, and a bunch of us had called in. I think I did, and Brian did, and several others did. And one of the blacks on the show, this Chad 80 guy, which everyone here knows about Chad, but I think he used to call in a truth militia once in a while, but he, he said something like, yeah, look at all these guys. All these guys are having sex with Mexicans and blacks. That's what he said on this black show. It was like a black talk show that Kyle was on. I'm losing the name right now, but everybody remembers this.
Reckless 2.0 or something.
Yeah, yeah, but that was something he said. He said, "Oh, all these guys talk about racialism all day long, but then on the side, they're all poking, brown girls, And it was just like
that's bullshit.
Yeah,
and I mean,
was like,
come on, it's there might be a small percentage of that going on, but I mean, for the most part, it's just not something to mention. So if there's things that you shouldn't even bring up, I mean, that's something that doesn't do any good to even bring up because it's not even true. And it's I don't know what particular I meant to go back and listen to that because I heard that it was actually a pretty productive show as far as back and forth.
We all learned that Scotland founded by a black woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's news to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know, man. I just it bothers me, man.
Let's be honest, man.
I mean, that's really why I left. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all just kind of going through our lives and you know, this is a way for us to get grounded, get back in touch with what's really important. And, you know, if you don't have relationships in real life with people, then your whole movement is online, you know. So you have to kind of find a way to combine the two. Because it's unhealthy when, you know, you're living one life and you're really living a double life, you know. So I think that's like a schizophrenic thing that a lot of people have, you know. So you should try to, you know, go on the shows, go in the chats, visit the blogs, do all that. But you know, try to stay connected to the people that you are interacting with on a regular basis and pull those people in. You know, because otherwise it's we're all, you know, we're just preaching to the converted or speaking to the choir or whatever.
Yeah, it's all about being positive, Dan. I mean, you know, that's why I love that speech at the beginning. I can't believe I haven't been reading that guy's stuff because I've always heard of him, and I just never, you know, I'm freaking lazy and I can't keep up with all with, you know, there's so many shows and articles out there. You know, I can't keep up with it all, but you know, I always meant to read his stuff, but after I heard that, I was just like, crap, man, I got to read more of this guy, because, you know, that whole part that, like I said before, you know, we have to, like, show these people that, you know, that it's, there's a positive impact to holding these views, and that it's good for everyone, and then we'll just bring more people to our side, you know, where,
hey, Nick,
you know, you're, huh?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Can I just say, you know, this is, you know, let me just try and get some ideas out here. I agree with everything you guys are saying about being positive and not infighting and all this stuff. But, like, technology has made it so that those who are on the fringe of society, who are on the outskirts, okay, are ostracized enough to not care what society thinks and are willing to express their natural racial views and instincts, tend to be, in many cases, detritus, you know, the waste. We get the losers, okay? That there are factors, you know, economic and social and cultural factors that are not in our hands. So a lot of times when people complain about the fighting and the movement is negative, dude, that stuff's out of your hands. So, like, I agree with what you're saying for your approach, how to deal with people outside of the movement. So that's more something you should preach for you. For the individual, when you're, like we were saying, when we deal right. in our personal lives with people in the flesh, you know, use that, what you're saying, for yourself.
Well, yeah.
As far
as
complaining about the movement, it's a bunch of fucking losers and it's
well,
all
see,
ego.
But,
there
well,
has to
on,
be
sir.
A struggle. There has to be a struggle. There has to be the people who are willing to fight for, who have ideals that are divine, okay? To be idealistic,
yeah,
that
but it will
are
see,
worth fighting for, and those who are noble who can fight and get them louder than those who are just egotistical. That's what has to happen. But like, it's going to be chaotic. I mean, like,
well, that's why the movement itself. It's like the movement. You have to bring the movement to the world where it's completely lacking, and you don't see any sign of activity
yeah,
in your
well,
life.
That's
going to be the secret to us winning. The movement, the people who have been involved in this for so long, you know, all you have is time on your hands to sit and pick apart this person or that person, and you know, it just gets to be, you know, a total waste of energy. I mean, so you know, that's why you should almost avoid the movement. Just take the movement and bring it where it needs to go. You know, just but forget the movement itself, if you know what I'm saying. Like, because it's like the movement itself is almost like a swamp, you know, or you know, it's like quicksand. It's quicksand.
It's a swamp.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's possible though that what I meant though about the positivity is that, you know, it's possible to be positive and still stand firm, you know, in your beliefs and what you think is right or wrong. You know, I mean, it's just that, yeah, I mean, the fighting, you know, I'm guilty of participating in it. You know, I try not to. I've actually been pretty good about it, and I haven't been getting myself involved in that kind of stuff. But, you know, I guess in one way, though, I got to say, it does kind of weed some of the you know, lesser elements out of this struggle. It kind of weeds them out because, you know, they were bad to begin with, and you know, now that they've been involved, they've started shit, and they, you know, and then they get shouted down or shunned, you know, by whoever, you know, after all this, you know, infighting or whatever you want to call it. But
yeah.
You know, I don't know. We need to stand firm, be positive, and you know, and try to just have like a set of rules. You know what I mean? Like, I know just the one about having
yeah.
a mixed race, but there's several others. You know, like, you don't stab people in the back. You don't, you know, you don't go working for the ADL or some crazy
yeah.
shit like that. You know,
you
know. Some,
say,
go ahead.
No, sorry, I keep interrupting people.
No, that's okay.
All, right,
all I wanted to say is that if you're working for the ADL, of course that should be brought out, but, you know.
No, I just want to say, like, my view has always been that the movement is its own thing. The movement, anybody who believes that the movement is going to become the mainstream has it wrong, okay? The movement's goal should be to wake more people up. And when more people and when more masses wake up, there will be better elements who have a voice that will be worth listening to. The movement right now is not the leaders, okay? There are some in it who are worthy of being leaders, okay? But the majority of it is not. Its goal should be to wake other people up and not worry about, you know, are we fighting too much? I understand, like, it's not good to bring other people into
right.
the movement when it's so chaotic, but its goal should not be about, you know, our goal is to wake the masses up. Because the best of our people are in the yet unwoken masses. That's my belief. You know, we don't have the quality that will, you know, if this ever became mainstream, our leaders are largely going to be those who are still asleep. That's always been my view.
Well, yeah, but
to me,
you can't.
Just being awake doesn't say a lot about you. It just plays more to circumstance in your
well,
own individual.
No, you're right. I mean, William Pierce said one time, if you know, if you got a good job and you got a hot wife and you're, you know, you got some kids and a decent, you're living in a nice area, you know, you've got all that to lose, you know, and then you see the movement itself and the way these people behave, you know, it just makes you apathetic. I mean, why would you throw it all away for something like that? But if it gets to the point where average regular people start to subscribe to these ideas and it's no longer radical or crazy, you know, to believe in race or to, you know, understand the Jewish problem or whatever, you know, to not believe in democracy anymore, you know, that's when it's going to get, you know, that's when it's going to get interesting, because now you'll have more support, like you said, Blute, from average folks. I mean, and you know, most people who are honorable are not, you know, are not intimately involved, right? Because they're afraid. They're afraid. I mean,
well, yeah, movements like these always start from the bottom up. I mean, you know, when you look at those old, you know, the old footage of the old rallies, the old NS rallies in Germany, you know, and you see millions of people there. I mean, some it's like crowds as far as your eyes can see, you know. You know, who's to say? I'm sure there's plenty of assholes and retards in those crowds, man. I mean, you know, not everybody. You know, you're not going to always just. You can't just have, like, it doesn't matter what group of people you have. I mean, you're going to have, like, the different. You know, I don't want to use the word caste, but, you know, you're going to have, like, the different levels. I mean, there's always going to be the grunts. There's always going to be the generals and the leaders and whoever. You know, I mean, there's always going to be, like, a hierarchy. You know. And it always starts in the bottom up anyway, you know, so, you know, it's always going to start out being regular, poor, white assholes who are going to be drawn to this because, you know, they see the problems that these Jews are causing firsthand, you know, see, the rich whites, even if they agree with us, they're not going to say anything. I mean, you know, just like you said, Danny, they're not going to throw their lives away. So that they can wear a swastika armband and goose step down the street, you know? And that's why I think
right.
just talking to regular people and keep doing these shows, and, you know, I think we're on the right track, really, to tell you the truth. It's just going to take some time. You know, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that the Jews are not going to survive the Internet. They can't stop it. It's totally destroying them. It's exposing them to even the dumbest retard on the street can tell you that, you know, that they think something's going on. You know, I mean, maybe they're not, you know, as hip to it as others, but...
Well, they're at least aware of the conspiracy. They're at least aware of the claim, the theory.
Well, that...
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is, you know, the weapon they have against us is the idea that we're the odd man out. We're the person who's the minority. Nobody thinks like us. But when you start to show them, no, actually, you're the person who's weird. You're the one that doesn't get it. You're ignorant. You have no idea what's going on. You know, that creates, you know, just through social friction, through just regular you know, the way the laws of society and the way people interact. I mean, if you feel like if a person feels like it's cool to think like this new way, you know, they're gonna just through peer pressure are gonna jump on board. And you know, that's why we got to do our best not to keep it this little tiny circle of people that are just talking to each other, and you know, present the idea that, look, this is becoming mainstream now. This is, you know, it's
Dana,
not... Yeah.
I'm sorry. A lot of the reason why I feel strongly the way I do as far as being, having some resolve as far as those who really care and are ideological, to call people out so that we can forge an ideology so that when the masses do wake up, there is the blueprint there for them, ready to go. You know what I mean? Like, let's struggle in the movement for the best ideology so that when the masses are awake to the reality, there's the fucking perspective there for them to grab a hold on. Like, a lot of these factors don't have anything to do with us. They're out of our control. It's not because of the movement that people aren't awake. It's because of other reasons, technology, economic wealth, political correctness, and all kind of stuff, like psychological, social, cultural, economic... like lies. I mean, it's, I mean, so that's why for me, like, it's okay if there's some fighting and battling so that we can get the right, the purest perspective that is in tune with nature and history, so that when the masses do wake up due to factors that are outside of our control that won't have anything to do with us, here's a view that is organic and touches their soul and connects with them, you know?
Yeah, but Blue, you know, back to that speech again from Alex Hurtagic, when he was talking about the message, he was like, you know, what do people respond to? Do they respond to the actual, like...
You're talking about waking people up, though. That's something different than what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the path to take once people are already woken up.
Yeah, but no, this kind of actually relates to that because, you know, he was talking about the messenger, you know, and this applies to even people who are awake, you know, because, you know, people need to see the success that we are having at all, you know. This is why, you know, I've talked about things like, you know, making sure you're physically in shape and working your brain too, you know, and studying and making sure that you're strong and smart. You want to be at least a somewhat of a success to show others that they can follow you. And I'm not saying, like, you know, everyone's going to be like this type of leader, but you should strive for these things. It's kind of like, you know, Nietzsche's Superman, you know, or Ubermensch. You know, it's kind of the same thing. We all need to strive for that, and it encourages others, even if they're awake.
I mean, all I'm saying is the judgmental thing is good if somebody has a real deep care flaw, or, you know, I mean, but to me, being overly judgmental is in itself a character flaw. I mean, I think that's kind of what's causing a lot of the issues we're having because, you know, people just, instead of looking at, you know, everything else, we got to start from the foundation that, look, we're all flawed human beings. You know, none of us are perfect. You know, and if you are a little tolerant and a little more, you know, willing to embrace somebody and overlook, you know, the negativity, you know, that's something that will ultimately lead to our numbers growing. I mean, because if everybody's just pointing fingers at each other, you know, that's where it gets ridiculous. You know, and the personalities and the hosts, and I get along with everybody. I really do. I mean, there's very few people that I dislike. You know, I mean, I will say when I have a problem with somebody, and, you know, I agree with you with Ronan, even, like, you know, but I basically encourage everybody to go and do their own thing, because even if you're, you know, causing problems, whatever, you're still there, and you're interacting with whatever social circle you're dealing with, so the end game is still in play. You know, the process is all moving forward, whether it's, you know, we're all, you know, if we're not all allied right now, well, maybe we will be in the future. I mean, that's the hope, because we would be so much stronger if we had an instinctual, you know, sense of brotherhood. That's really...
It's all about morale and character. Those are the two things, man.
Right.
I agree, Dana, with what you're saying in a certain context. And when I'm saying these different talking point or these different opinions that I'm relaying are based on specific happenings within the movement, recent happenings. Ronan, for instance. Me calling him, using ad hominem attacks against him, for instance, say on Facebook, is not stopping him from doing his thing and reaching people. But if I feel it's necessary, because in my view, all he does is attack people. Now, I understand we don't want egotistical people where it's about personality. But to me, it's not about – to me, it's has nothing to do with me. I'm trying to be like what you say to keep our egos out of it. But to me, like, I feel strongly about many different things. And when I see somebody where all they do is just generalize and attack people and ad hominem – well, I have a certain ego that is going to come into play, and I am going to say, you're a faggot bitch, and you're a fucker, and fuck you, and I'm not going to apologize for it, and I don't want to encourage less insightful people to do it. Like, maybe this would be a conversation that we'd more agree on if it weren't on the air for listeners, okay, you know, where we don't want to encourage the kind of thing I'm saying, where let's all just go nuts and attack people. But like it's strategic. Like you made in a comment, it's all a propaganda game. It's propaganda war. So if I feel that I'm coming from a place with a strong enough foundation ideologically, and no matter that he has a party and followers and he's much older and much more educated, well, maybe I feel that I've read enough and I'm idealistic enough and insightful enough that if he's behaving in a certain way, I'm going to fucking ad hominem his ass just because.
Is he from Canada?
Yeah.
He deserves it. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, he's from Canada. See, you know, I've stepped up to Ronan. I have sent him messages or in comments, you know, where I actually criticize how he goes about things, because I just say, you know, this doesn't help anything. You know, it's like this idea that everybody else sucks and I'm the best, you know, and you're all wrong and you're stupid Americans and blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, I find it to be ridiculous too, you know? So, I mean, I have checked him, but at the end of the day, I'm still Facebook friends with him. We're still friends, you know, and that's all I'm saying, you know? Yeah.
It's all balance. I agree with you 100% in certain contexts. It's all balance. It all becomes down to a discussion of where does the line get crossed? I agree with you. It's just we debate, you know, at what point would we disagree on whether or not now is the time to ignore that suggestion to get along and coexist. To me,
I mean, look, America, you know, he's only one of many examples. I mean, there's a million examples. I mean, we could talk about anything. I mean, but to me, it's just this kind of radio is, you know, that's part of it because it involves our lives.
Off
air. Yeah, I mean, it's better because the people who are going to listen to us, you know, we don't want them to think that this is just a Jerry Springer show for Nazis. That's all I'm saying. That's kind of what it. That's
well,
that, that's what
I agree
sounds,
with you.
A lot of times.
Well, you got to remember too, America. You know, I mean, it would be so ridiculous for someone, especially living in Canada. And I'm not even bashing this guy. I'm not that familiar with him, but. You know, with America, you've got at least, and this is on like the low end, you've got at least 100 million white people here, right? I mean, that's what, like 40%? That's like a really low ball number. You know, like there might be more, you know, but we'll just say there's at least 100 million whites in America. I mean, that's a
try 50 at least.
I'll agree on 50%.
100 million is only like 30%. Or are you saying
50?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like 300 million. There's like 300 plus million. So yeah, there's at least 100 to 150 million white share at least. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll say 100 plus, right? Like 150. I mean, we'll even stay on the low end. We'll say 150, you know, 100 to 150 million. And you know, I mean, that's, you know, that's a lot of people, man. And it, you know, you're going to have these kind
of multiple nations. Multiple nations, yeah. Multiple.
I come from PA Dutch country. Represent.
Well, see that they say in
well,
Europe.
Well, that's why. Well, that's what pisses me off. That when people don't realize the potentiality there for you know, yeah, white nationalists kind of are a joke right now. But that doesn't mean that's how it's going to stay. I mean, you look in Europe; these countries, Greece only has 12 million people. I mean, you know, the potential for white nationalism in this country is huge. It's epic. You know, ultimately, Europe is probably going to go first towards our perspective because we still have a sense of European identity. But over here, all we have is racial identity, and for many of us, they don't even have that. But I mean, we could be a huge force. Okay, this is gonna be the fate of the next century.
Look at the failure of the Tea Party. You know, I mean,
go ahead. No, let me just say real quick. I hate to keep bringing up Ronan as an example. That's why he annoys me so much when you talk about all we have is racial identity. His party line is so dogmatic. I'm not trying to make it personal. It's just I'm trying to get to express these ideas for the deeper meanings behind them. His party, I know it's probably a better phone conversation than on the radio, but his party line is so dogmatic. Like, he calls America "Numerica," spelled with a K, and he's right about it balkanizing and breaking down. But he's like, you know, white nationalism is like, he talks about it as like this monolithic thing, right? And he tries to contrast white nationalism, which is just European racialism, because white equals European racially, and nationalism, we define it by race. He tries to contrast white nationalism with ethno-nationalism as though there's any fucking difference. There's no difference. But like you're saying, like, Europe has ethnicities, and we just have the race consciousness as far as the nationalist movements, right? But we're not a monolithic thing. Like, that's the only point I was trying to say. Like, he tries.
Well,
how
that's
is
what,
white
that's
nationalism
what, you know,
not a form of ethno-nationalism? That's totally nonsensical.
Absolutely, and Tom Sunick makes the same point. Is that, you know, if anything, right now American white nationalism is behind because we have the most, you know, brainwashed population. You know, because I mean, let's be honest, you know, the Jews are pretty much in the driving seat right now. But, you know, the fact that we have all these white ethnicities here that have all intermixed into one race,
exactly.
that's actually a strength. I mean, because in Europe, you know, they're still that's right. So the Pan-Aryan
model
is going to take place here. Right.
Well, yeah, as if it's
I'm
not
Germanic and Celtic
Europe.
And Greco-Roman and Slavic. I'm everything.
No one can pretend
absolutely
that it's not happening in Europe, too. I mean, who's going to try to tell me or anyone else that, you know, people in Northern Europe or even other parts of Europe, the Mediterranean, it doesn't matter, that these people aren't intermarrying with each other? I mean, that's complete insanity, man. I mean, you're going to try to tell me that, you know, English and Irish are intermarrying, you know, Germans and Slavics from the Eastern European area. You know, you're going to tell me that these people aren't interbreeding with each other. That's why if you're against Pan-Aryanism, it's just, it's nonsensical. It's retarded. I just don't understand how you could, you know, try to promote an idea like that. Is that kind of what the angle this Ronan guy goes for? You know, like,
his problem is he acts like only ethno-nationalism is legitimate. And the concept of white nationalism or racialism is just a phony American concept. But I mean, what he doesn't get is that, you know, that is the future ultimately. I think, you know, these idea of nation states are important, but you know, if you go back to history, you know, race is more important than nation. These nations are only centuries old, some of them. It's the blood that is thousands of years old, you know. And
that's why Varg Vikernes, who is the supreme racialist,
he married a French girl. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. People in Europe, same thing we do here. I mean, it's no different. I mean, you know, you meet a white girl that you like or you love, and you marry her and you have kids. I mean, you're not going to sit there and be like, oh, well, are you from like this part of England, or like, are you from like this one part of this one mountainous region of Germany or something? You know, I mean, it's totally insane, man. I mean, you know, white Europeans have been intermarrying for thousands of years. I mean, you know, how do you think that all of the Northern European countries, the people are basically the same. I mean, the Vikings, they went back and forth between England. You had all the Germanic tribes traveling around, and I mean, you know, they all interbred with each other, and they became what we are today. And it's not just them, but all of Europe. I mean, we're basically the same people, you know. And it's ethno-nationalism.
You know,
I think,
and to me, it's. You know, the ethno-nationalism is great until it becomes, you know, something that is divisive racially, you know, and that's where I check out, because if Europeans don't start thinking racially, you know, it's just as bad as Americans not having an identity at all. I mean, Americans, like, I mean, they don't even know they're white over here. I mean, it's...
That's why I get vicious on these people who say things like, you know, like Greeks aren't white, or Italians are not white, or these Slavs are not white. You know, that's why I tell these people, fuck you, man. I mean, you get these, you know, you get some of these Stormfront retards and other retards all over the internet who bicker and bitch and whine about, you know, who's the most racially purest group, and you know, and that kind of ties into ethno-nationalism. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, oh, well, we're those people, we're going to stay in this little area, and we're going to like have all this tribal warfare with all this broken up group, you know. And all the while this is all going on, hundreds, or you know, I don't want to say hundreds of millions, but tens of millions of Arabs are flooding into Europe, and Africans, you know, destroying the place. And you're going to sit here and talk about ethno-nationalism? It's like, you better unify, or place is going to fucking burn to the ground, you know?
I mean, it's just like what's going on with Ukraine and Russia. I mean, to me, you know, the Russians, you know, are, you know, just as white as the Ukrainians. I mean, so this hostility between the two countries is not something that should be exacerbated, you know, by, you know, I mean, I understand all the history. I understand why, you know, they hate each other. But if a white Ukrainian Slav can't look at a white Russian Slav, you know, as a brother, then we're screwed. I mean, and that's why, you know, it's important for us to always bring that up. And here's a perfect thing to go along with that, right off of Mind Weapons, the Biological European Union. Udo Voigt said, we say Europe is the continent of white people and it should remain that way. Lead candidate for the NPD in Germany. The comment here by Mind Weapons is, it's good to see European nationalists using the term white people. The anti-whites always say that it's okay for us to celebrate being Irish or Italian or British, but not white. Oh my God, that's so evil. The lefties say white identity is evil. Therefore, we know exactly what ideological ground we want to occupy. Whites have a right to exist. New meme, the Biological European Union, BEU. Maybe someone can get a better term, but one that uses the term European Union for global white identity and unity.
It's heresy.
So there you go.
You know?
I mean, it's you know, the idea of a united Europe, you know, that looks at everybody as part of one race is where it needs to go. And there's no better place to start than America, where all these immigrant European groups have already mixed, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, I think our race nationalism – our race nationalism is just as legitimate as Italian nationalists, Greek nationalists, Hungarian nationalists, or what have you.
Well,
you know, I mean, it's,
Dana, could you imagine?
Ultimately, we're going to have to unify. We're going to have to start making connections over there. It's already happening. But you know, we have to get our shit together here first. You know, so. But yeah, anyway, I mean, I figured I'd just say that because, you know, yeah.
A lot of the borders in Europe are total, you know, as far as biology, if there are any, if we are to speak of any bloodlines that are somewhat pure and isolated, the borders have nothing to do with that. If you look at the modern nation states, there are many different subsets of our European race, or races, if you even want to say, within them. And in America, I agree that there are going to be regional identities, but there needs to be a pan-European racial ideal, and there needs to be a respect, a total respect, across the line, and we can debate where that line ends. Europe as an ideal and the people who constitute that history, you know, and we can debate the admixture. We have to be tolerant to a degree. You know, certain Mediterraneans have admixture from other races, and there are going to be Americans that have native so-called Americans.
I read all Italians are niggers, dude. Just kidding.
All Italians are niggers. They're going to be Americans that have Native American ancestry, that have even Asian admixture. We need to have an ideal that is as white as possible, but at the same time realistic and you know, not dogmatic.
Right, exactly.
Like, we have to have an ideal, but we have to and draw lines at some place, but we have to be realistic at the same time. And you know, like, I understand the concept of ethno-national regional identities and such, but yeah, race has to be a key factor. You can't understand anything without as far as we're concerned, because what do we want to protect? I always say I want to protect the history, the legacy, the mythologies, the traditions, the cultures, and that go along with the genetics
right.
of Europe. What I want to protect. So I'm not willing to compromise on that issue, okay?
I mean, you know, that's why the Golden Dawn for me is so great, because you have a Greek population that are so anti-German because the Germans invaded them in World War II. So it's the same kind of shit. But, you know, if you really look at it, Hitler was a Hellenist. I mean, I always said National Socialism was Germanic Hellenism. And,
you know,
he modeled the Third Reich off of Rome.
Well, I wanted to say one of the greatest things he did was he took the symbols, you know, the mythology, the ideology, everything that has to do with, you know, Germanic and Norse paganism. And I actually was thinking about this the other day, and I was just so amazed by it, you know, because he basically took those beliefs and those symbols, and he solidified them in fucking stone that they are our beliefs, our ancient history. It's ours. It'll forever be ours. You can never wear those symbols. If you're not white and you were to be walking around with one of the rune stones or any of these kind of symbols, you would look like a retard, because, you know, it's so solidified. Like, it will forever be ours. And I personally consider it to be pretty much the greatest accomplishment of the Third Reich, National Socialism, and Hitler, is that, you know, that is, it's forever ours, man. We're never going to lose it.
That's why my idealism is so abstract, because it's I recognize the natural irrationality of man, okay? And in doing so, acknowledging this nature in man, finding an abstract ideal that coincides with that to preserve through genetics is the most efficient way of becoming eternal as a people. You're talking about, like, non-whites wearing those symbols, how ridiculous it is. I was on an anti-fascist Facebook the other day, just last night, where it was something about that the anonymous life of an anti-fascist or something. And I went on his Facebook and I wrote Heil Hitler, and he posted a music video called Hitler Only Had One Ball, right? So I posted a video called I don't know exactly in German. It was titled in German. I'll post it later. something about the wind blows, and then I post another video, a Adolf Hitler tribute. And I said, which video is more powerful? And he said, oh, mine with the one ball. And I just, you know, LOL'd him. You know? And then he quoted some shit, some Marxist group in India, some shit. And I posted a video of Gandhi quotes. He wrote letters to Hitler calling him a friend, saying that me calling you a friend
right.
is no formality at all. I didn't want to write you. My friends urged me to write you, but I refused because I figured it would be an impertinence upon you. And he said, we don't doubt for a second your dedication to your fatherland and to your people and all this stuff. And, and the quotes of Kennedy and, you know, if we die, so fucking what, guys? The earth is going to burn up this planet. Let's be rooted in soil and blood. But let's be abstract and idealistic, too, because that's the whole, you know, man is irrational. We need abstract ideals, but ones that are rooted in blood and soil. And that's how
I
believe.
That's what's so important about, like, that's what's so freaking awesome about the ancient Germanic paganism. You know, it was like, it's like, who cares if you die? You should embrace death. You should be totally happy to die because it'll just, you know, of course not happy to die, but I mean like happy to die, you know, at least in a struggle or as a warrior, as someone who is at least fighting to his death, because through that, you know, you'll go on in the next life and that life will be better,
purpose.
You know?
It gives
your
life purpose. Man, you can be nihilistic,
yeah.
or you can fight for something that, dude. Like I can be totally nihilistic if I want to. My individual life, I have no qualms about it. I hate the people around me, no matter what. That's gonna happen even in an ideal society. There's no utopia, okay? But you have these. Some of us are more awakened to the divine in nature. You can fight for this, right, and bring something important about it. And to me, nothing is more – you know, there aren't other races that can idealize and be as ideological as our race. They don't have the recorded history with the greatness that our race does. That's not something to give up, you know. That's not something that is just given to us. That's something that's been granted to us through hard struggle, not conscious struggle, but just circumstance. I don't care if it's not our ancestors weren't racial because they were isolated. But so what? How can they stay alive unless we preserve the genetics?
They were tribal.
Of course they were. They were. There was some racialism, but there's also ambiguity. To me, acknowledging certain things that people would try to say would undermine the racist, quote-unquote, position, if we embrace them, like when people say race is a social construct, right, Dana? I say, yeah, you're right. It is to an extent a construct, but it's a construct that is built upon genetic and biological realities. So if we embrace their argument,
right.
and then, you know, give our input from our perspective, we can destroy them anyway through emotion. I saw – I'm going to post – video later. I'm outside right now. The Swedish youth in Sweden, they're fucked, man, that country. My ancestors come from Sweden. My mother, my maternal side is 40% Swedish, according to DNA tests. That country, it saddens me so much, okay? The Swedish youth, right, of the Swedish Democratic Party or something like that, they put out a video. It's so powerful. Honestly, it is more powerful than many of the hardline so-called anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, racialist parties. I'm going to post it. Please watch it. And I'm going to post right after it the response from the liberals in Sweden. Dude, like I said, when I commented Heil Hitler to this anti-fascist, what is more powerful? What touches your soul? What is worth dying for, okay? These Europeans saying in Russian and German and Swedish and Italian and Spanish, Europe belongs to us. We have had enough. Europe is bleeding, okay? And then this liberal view, Africans are dying trying to immigrate to Europe. Oh, they just want a better life. Oh, xenophobia. Oh, anti-immigration is solely based on fear-mongering and fear of the different.
Yeah, Blue, you want to talk about...
What is more powerful? We are the true tribalists, you know? We are the true moralists. A world that is respects difference. If everybody were consciously racial, and if I said nigger and a black man didn't have a problem with it, and then we had a conversation about Jews and could shake each other's hand and he called me cracker, I don't have a problem with that black man, okay? You know, call me cracker, I'll call you nigger, we'll talk about Jews, and then we'll slap hands and have a beer. So
no,
what?
You can't say nigger. Only black people are allowed to say nigger, okay? That's their word. They earned it. We're not allowed to say that, guys.
Well, I got two quick points here. I just wanted to see, because you're talking about the Africans going to Europe. There's this freaking church pastor, Christian church pastor. I don't really know the guy, but he lives up the street from me. I'm not going to get too into it, but he lives up the street from me. He's even got this giant van that he, like, takes, you know, the church people to church. I don't know what they do with it. You know, they go on expeditions or whatever they do, but... it's unbelievable, man. This guy, I've talked about this guy before. He's got a blonde haired white wife. He's white too. And, they got about three or four white kids, right? I think two of the girls have blonde hair and he's got a couple sons, and they have three adopted blacks from South Africa, or not South Africa, South America, from what I'm assuming from their looks. I don't know for sure where they're from, but they look like they're from South America, right? And this is what I saw today, guys. I saw a little white boy with brown hair. He was white. He was pushing a stroller with a black baby in it. Guys, I want everyone here to really let that sink the fuck into your brain. I saw this just today as I was walking down the street, because I walk, you know, all over the place, you know, for exercise, and I walk by this guy's house all the time, and that's why I see him all the time. And I've seen his daughter pushing the same baby, by the way. It's getting some echo there.
You're good.
Yeah, sorry. But I saw, yeah, I mean, you know, think about that. A little white boy, a little brown-haired white boy pushing a black baby. And then the only other point I wanted to make besides that was you were talking about saying nigger in front of black people. I actually had a funny incident. I haven't talked about it yet, but over the weekend I went to this giant parade here in Portland. And, you know, I was getting drunk with these girls that I know. And, you know, so we're, like, standing around in downtown, you know, and there's, like, 300,000 fucking people in downtown. And one of the girls that I was with had said, like, something, something, something. I can't remember what she said, but she was like, something, something, nigga. And there was this black guy with his girlfriend, and they were both black. And they kind of looked up. And then they just were like, whatever. And then they, like, kept going. It was so weird, dude. And we just kept going, though, because we were all, like, kind of drunk, you know. So it was like, fuck it, who cares? But it was just really funny.
Well, Nick, the last time
when I was with my girlfriend, we walked by some kids. They were, like, teens. They must have been, like, 14 or whatever. And they're all wiggered out, you know, trying to be wiggers, and, you know, I just walked by them, and I said, you like nigger music? And they looked at me like I was from another planet, man. They were like, what did he just say? You know, but I could have changed their whole lives right there. You know, you never know, man. I mean, it's like somebody's got to just come with a sledgehammer sometimes and, you know, just remind these people.
Yeah, Blue talked about this before. Blue, I remember you saying in the chat one time, you were saying that some of these young wigger kids, you know, that they adopt the wiggerism and the mannerisms and everything.
Oh,
and the dress. Yeah, because, well, they want to – you were saying – I remember one time you told me in the chat a long time ago, you said that they're trying to act masculine, you know, like they see it as a form of masculinity.
It's all about a strong horse. When you see a strong horse and a weak horse, you want to ride it. Our race is – crippled by mind diseases, liberalism, progressivism, Christianity, suicidal pathology. They see these droids who get away with everything.
I think we're a strong retarded horse. I think we're a strong mentally retarded horse.
I was walking down a street.
Maybe that's the solution. Maybe all white nationalists should just chimp out and just bang.
See, that's what I'm talking about when I say
let's be gorillas.
Talk shit in the struggle in the movement. Let's be assholes. But I don't want to advocate that at all because there's so many retards in this movement.
I was making an important point about that.
They'd be talking about Christ and all, and how we're the real Hebrews, and they'd be calling everybody faggots.
I just want to make a point, though, because you had said that they were, like, probably, you know, searching for some sort of masculinity in their lives because they don't want to be seen as, like,
you
a
know,
masculine.
Where's a masculine white role model, Nick?
Yeah, I'm saying that we should do that, and we should talk to them because, you know, we might be able to, you know, because Dana was saying he was, you know, had seen these wiggers, you know, and I'm saying that, like, they see it as a form of masculinity, and I think we need to, like, try to turn them from that. I know it can be difficult, but, you know.
No, I agree, absolutely, and that's why.
There's white nationalists in the UFC, you know, there's some role models for me. But
Dana White. Man, he says that brown pride is okay, but white pride is not okay. If white pride, you're a hillbilly redneck, and we know where you're coming from, piece of shit. And you know, Italian pride or Irish pride is okay, but white pride's not okay. But brown pride's okay. You don't have to say Dominican pride or Puerto Rican pride or Colombian pride. Brown pride is okay, but white pride you have to specify. I just wanted to put that in there.
One time
I was walking down Lancaster City, right? That's where I did my 10 months for my crime, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. Anyway, I'm not from Lancaster. I'm around that area. I'm from Pennsylvania, German territory. I see Amish buggies on Sundays is a regular occurrence around here. But anyway, I was walking down a street in Lancaster City one time, and there were two little kids between 3 and 5 years old. One looked like he was Hispanic and one looked like he was mixed, a mulatto, black and white. They called me a cracker. So nigger, you know, you're not a slave and I'm not a slave owner, okay? So what the fuck is the difference if I'm calling you a nigger and you're calling me at the age of, you know, there's a video. Do you see that video, Nick, that's been posted in Renegade Chat recently of that black guy who filmed that white woman calling him a nigger outside of, like, a Best Buy or something? And within, like, 4 days, it had, like, 7.5 million views. And every comment is, that fucking bitch, I hope she dies. I hope she burns in hell. Fuck her, that fucking racist. Blah, blah, blah. I can't believe that this kind of racism still exists. And all she did was call him a nigger. You know what I mean? It's just a fucking word. But I'm walking down an alleyway.
Well, I'll tell you this right now.
A 4-year-old called me a
cracker. They believe,
what the hell is the difference? What's the difference? Oh, the history is different.
If they see, they don't think white people are going to physically defend themselves. That's what it comes down to. If they think for one second that you will fight them, they're not going to talk. They're not going to do anything. You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to. That's why force really is important here, and, you know, fight club concepts are important because, you know, that's how we've lost our edge. You know, we feel like we have to just shrivel and shrink and, you know, just crawl into the fetal position. I mean, you know, if you say something and you got your fist behind it, you know, that's when the real power comes.
Yeah, I actually had an incident.
Our people are the problem. I used to be a Christian, and I was a racist when I was a Christian. When I was a Christian and a racist, I was still willing to go, potentially, to a Christian Bible college. It didn't manifest. I was in the process of becoming heathenized through Vard Vikernes was a big influence. When he told me through the Until the Light Takes Us movie, right, when he was in jail, saying that baptism is essentially calling out the Jewish God to replace the pagan soul, right, with the Jewish spirit, right? That really touched me. And that wasn't it, but that was a big part of it.
Oh.
I was willing, as a racist, to go to Africa, not to evangelize, but to just dig ditches. For something to do, to go to churches, to go to different churches and beg for money to sponsor me, to go there, pay me to go to Africa and I'll dig ditches.
We got like 30 seconds.
Oh, fuck, man.
We got like 30 seconds left. I just I want to thank all you guys for coming tonight. And, I'll probably be on next week, man, so.
Please, Dana.
Fuck rule, man. And I hope to see you.